This week, two veterans of non-Vimani music games team up to create a new story-driven rhythm-action adventure game. Heard of Parappa, Guitar Man, Vibberman? Then stay tuned for the information we have, along with the rest of the week's gaming news, starting right now on the show, where every gamer has a voice.
Orange Lounge Radio.
Hello, my friends out there on the internet, and welcome back to another week of the show where every gamer has a voice. It is Orange Lounge Radio, live tonight, May the 14th of 2017, with episode number 686 of our show. My name is Rob Roberts. You might know me on Twitter at Sky, S-K-I-E, joining me in studio to talk about, of course, video games, gaming culture, the gaming lifestyle over the next few hours. Dark Sakura or Jamie Summers?
I'm hunting.
What are you hunting?
Kittens.
Are you hunting shinies?
I'm hunting kittens.
That's what Shane was hunting all day yesterday on our road trip, but I'll talk about that later.
I said a cat trap.
You said a cat trap? No. What did the kitties do to you?
Well, okay. We have the poor little four babies and their mom in my front yard.
Yeah.
Hiding in the shrub.
Yeah.
Dan accidentally backed over one.
No.
And
that's horrible.
He was real tore up about it, so I'm making sure that I
trap. He didn't do it on purpose, you know.
Yeah, but he was still tore up about it.
Of course.
So we're trapping the mama. And the three remaining babies.
So you're trapping them to take them to a safer place.
The ASPCA where I live is no kill.
Good.
And we'll get them adopted out.
Yay.
So there'll be a happy end to this. But if I come in bleeding from my arms, everyone will know why.
All right. Well, good luck in that adventure. But good on you guys doing the right thing.
And any local people want to adopt three adorable kittens, they're mostly weaned. And they're cute, and I'm going to help socialize them, so they'll hate everybody.
Do you have pictures on Twitter or something for people to see?
I can put them up.
Okay, there you go.
I want to wait till I get better pictures of them.
All right.
So.
All right. Well, animal humanist Dark Sakura or Jamie Summers, say hello as well over there to Techmaster Loki.
But remember, if they've lost their mittens, you can't give them pie.
that's right.
But I can tell their mittens good night.
How are you doing,
mittens.
Loki?
Good night, kittens.
I'm fine.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Busy week?
I guess.
Yeah? How's the adventures in 3D printing going?
I haven't done any this week because I've been really tired. But I've been actually, well, I've still been downloading stuff to 3D print, but I haven't actually gone in. So I still have to set up the auto level on the new fan shroud thing now. So I was just like, I just don't want to do that right now.
Yeah.
And last night, I was like, man, I should 3D print something. And I'm like, I'm too fucking tired to do this right now.
How long does it take? Like, is it a really slow process?
Yeah, it takes a few hours.
I bet.
Depends on what you're printing. But you just have to get started and just kind of go from there. But right now, mine is kind of, I still haven't gotten everything leveled and the firmware updated. So it's just kind of, you kind of keep an eye on it. You know? But after a while, you know, once I know it's printing well, I can just leave it there for however many hours it's going to take.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, a lot of the stuff that I printed has been like 3 hours long, mm-hmm. and that's really small things.
So. Yeah, wow. Okay. Well, good things come to those who wait. But it's one of those things where, like, the technology in 10 years, the same thing that takes you 3 hours to print today will take, like, 30 seconds. Like, I don't know if you remember. Okay.
Well,
do y'all remember out there? Well, you got to be as old as myself and my co-host to remember this. But, okay, there was a classic old program on the old computers, whether it was the Apple IIe or the Commodore 64 or whatever it was you were using. It was called the Print Shop.
Yeah.
And you could make banners. So today is Mother's Day, right? So happy Mother's Day to all you moms and motherly figures and mothers of children with four legs and all that good stuff. But in the print shop, let's say you wanted to do a printer or a banner that said Happy Mother's Day. It would be like,
but see, that doesn't work on modern printers because you need those old
take forever.
Yeah, that's
those
the only
old feed dot matrix printers.
I do miss
the banners that you can make the dot matrix printers and like peeling off the little the sides on it.
Yes.
Those are pretty fun.
But now it's like if you want to print a banner, you know, you could do, yeah, you're right. You can't really do it the same way. You could just string a bunch of laser paper together or, you know, take it to FedEx, Kinko's or one of those types of stores and they do it for you and minutes.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't take nearly as long.
Well, I was going to say, though, you probably can't necessarily print faster because the reason it goes as speed as it does is the actual plastic needs to harden so that it sticks.
Right.
Because if you go too fast, then
that makes sense.
It makes a big mess.
Gotcha. Let's go to our chat room. Hi, everybody, over at live.vognetwork.com, because we do tape live every Sunday night after the Bobby Blackwolf show at the Voice of Geeks Network, vognetwork.com, 6 o'clock Pacific, 9 o'clock Eastern-ish. And I noticed that SSJ100 Matt commenting on the Jamie situation about what happened if she came in here bleeding from her arms one day. SSJ100 Matt says, I would have guessed if Jamie came in bleeding from her arms, it would be because she finally snapped on a bad driver.
I almost did. Girl, no. This truck almost, like, tagged the snub nose of my roller skate, meaning my Fiat.
Mm-hmm.
Not signaling. What a stupid, stupid fuck. What a stupid fuck.
Apparently, the print shop ruffling a lot of nostalgic feathers in chat. A lot of people cheering for the print shop. And Dungeon Buster says, I love that thing. True workhorse. These inkjets are junk. ActDev says Dot Matrix printers, the original dubstep creators. Yes.
I've said in there that the reason why we all have hearing damage is because of Dot Matrix printers and dial-up modems.
Oh my God. Yeah, you'd have to leave the room when print shop is going. Like, seriously, a banner would take like 30 to 45 minutes to print in the freaking print shop.
But it was so cool though, because they just like feed out in this like big pile of paper. You know?
Yeah.
I
was
remember
awesome.
Like my first year of college in 94.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Writing my paper and having to do it in the lab that had the printer.
Right.
The lab that had the printer. It was like that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And having to wait in line and seriously waited an hour just to get like a 5-page essay printed.
I remember when it was a big, I mean, tuning in tonight to Old People Lounge Radio. But here's the thing. I remember when you would use a word processing software where it didn't look like on the screen what it did on the page. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, it was you had just like plain text because we weren't in graphic environments yet. Like, you know, the Commodore 64 didn't get that until they got GEOS, the graphic environmental operating system, which was kind of Commodore 64's late life answer to what Apple ended up moving into at the time with Macs, because GEOS looks like a Mac.
Was the big originator of a widespread graphical interface.
Right. And that was, you know, and then obviously Microsoft filed, followed suit on the PC and all that stuff with their own Word. And then everything finally looked like what it was. But I remember, like, the only way you could preview, like, what's this really going to look like is to print it. Or, like, what?
And pray.
What does it, or you have to get out the manual because, like, what does this font look like?
Sacrifice some chickens. Seriously.
Let's see. Okay, I'll read a few more memories here in chat. SSJ100 Matt says, I remember getting in trouble in the first grade for typing a book report and printing it on my Dot Matrix printer. My teacher was pissed and wanted me to handwrite it because she thought my parents would do it if it was typewritten. Oh, interesting. Is that why, I don't know about you, SSJ100 Matt, but I have hideous handwriting. Is that because computers spoiled me in that regard? I do feel like my handwriting did get better with age, but it's still not great. Like, you probably would look at my handwriting and think I was in, like, junior high school.
I had a lot better handwriting when I was in high school. And now, when I got back into drawing again and working, because I had that problem with my hand.
Right.
My handwriting's gotten better since I've had all those surgeries.
Hmm.
So.
See, I've never had artistic ability. That my mom had all that, but she didn't pass that down to me. I got my dad's chicken scratch handwriting gene.
My fives still sometimes look like S's.
Mm.
It's just a quirk.
It was a challenge because, you know, I'm a corporate teacher by day, and now everything is really on projectors and all that stuff. But I still remember when we were using whiteboards regularly, and I'm having to like write on the whiteboard, and I'm like, God, my handwriting is awful. So I just learned to write in all caps. When I wrote on the board, because like all capital letters are kind of like the easiest thing to like not have be super ugly.
They can
ugly.
Hear it better.
Yeah, and they can hear it better. That's right. I'm shouting at my class. You will learn this.
Although I will tell you that for most people, it actually is easier to read something written in lowercase because you have more different heights, and a good reader will read by the shape of the word and a bad reader will sound out the letters.
Do you know what weird thing I do with my handwriting that I've been called out on before? My A's, okay? Most people write an A like an O, but with a tail, right? Mm-hmm. I write my A like an upside down E with a tail, because on a computer, when you print it in time or in a book in Times New Roman, that's what it really looks like. The letter A looks like that. But most of us.
Oh, with the appendage at top.
Yeah. Like, that's how most of us actually read A's in magazines. So that's kind of like how I learned
to
write it.
That's how I used to write my A's when I was in high school. And after, I don't know what it is, right after my surgery, They all went to the circle with the tail.
But that's, yeah, isn't that weird? Why do they teach us to write? I mean, this is great video game chat, isn't it? But hey, well, maybe you're designing a font for your video game,
well,
and you need to know how to do your A.
Keep in mind, computer fonts are based off of old letterpress type, which usually letterpress type was based off of, you know, we're looking at letters generated in the 1700s, 1600s, back as far as the 1400s when we had the first letterpress.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the first letterpress was Comic Sans.
No, it was Girl. Papyrus. That's why it's old looking.
Whatever. But I mean, a lot of letters, the alphabet itself has changed so much visually, just evolved, that, you know, when you look at these letters, we're technically looking at the way people wrote thousands of years ago, or hundreds of years ago, I should say. You know, so there's your history lesson. That's why ye old shop, in old letterpress, the Y-E was the th sound.
Interesting.
It was actually a different letter set.
So. I'm learning tonight on OLR.
Who was the graphic design major here?
All right, don't be all waving it around. looking in our chat, Fifth Dream in chat says, me too, Rob, A bros. So I guess Fifth Dream also writes the A's like that. And Brad from Pod Culture says, Orange Font Radio. What is your favorite font, Dark Sakura? My favorite font is Comic Papyrus. I just got the finger.
Actually, have you seen Comic Slab?
No, I've not seen Comic Slab.
Okay, a slab font is the thick serifs, like the Old West font.
Mm-hmm.
Someone did Comic Sans with, instead of it being Sans, it was a slab serif.
Mm-hmm.
So it looks like Old Western Comic Sans, and it's freaking hilarious. By the way, my favorite fonts are Helvetica New.
Mm-hmm. They did a whole documentary on Helvetica, right?
Mm-hmm.
That is so boring. I'm just kidding.
It actually is more or less like the social phenomenon behind Helvetica.
No, documentaries actually are fascinating.
It actually, though, was a really good documentary.
Yeah.
My other one is Adobe Garamond Pro for a serif font. And my other one is Futura.
Bobby Blackwolf in chat says Eurostyle, which is, of course, the Vogue logo is Eurostyle.
Because it's clean and easy and modern looking.
All right.
I only type completely in impact bold.
Cinco de Milo in chat is falling asleep, so I think we need to get to video game talk. Let's get to our kickoff topic tonight. We're going to talk about what's going on in the news. I want to start with this because I think this is kind of fascinating and a sign of the, you know, talking about the olden days versus gaming today. I'm sure a lot of you guys have heard by now, and if you haven't, this is really your last chance to get in on this. In fact, when the podcast listeners hear this, this is already going to be a done deal, unfortunately. But Alan Wake is being delisted. Alan Wake is being removed from Steam and other digital storefronts. That includes the Xbox Live Store after May 15th, so Monday, which I believe like 10 a.m. or so is the time it's going to go down. And they are saying this is because of music licensing. There are songs in Alan Wake, and if you've played Alan Wake, the songs are very important in the game, you know, obviously to set the mood and everything. You know, they use the songs pretty heavily, and they have some pretty big songs. Like they have Nick Cave and the Bad Seeds. They have the Black Angels, Young Men Dead. And I was tweeting about this earlier, but there was a song I loved when I was in college, and it's a song by the artist Poe. She was a singer. She was famous for that song, Hey Pretty. But she had a song, Johnny, Angry Johnny. But she had a song called Haunted that was in
Good
Alan Wake.
Song.
Oh my God, it's such an underrated song, right? And I remember buying that CD in like 98 or 99 whenever it came out, back when we still had Tower Records, right? I bought that CD and I loved it. And then 11 years later, I'm playing Alan Wake in 2010, right? When it finally came out for Xbox 360. Because remember, that game had a forever dev cycle. Like they were showing that game off when they announced the 360. It finally comes out in 2010. And then like, I think it's the end of chapter 2. I beat chapter 2 and that song started playing and I totally did the whole like gasp, like the like, oh my God, somebody else knows this song. Somebody at Remedy knew this song and put it in the game. And so like I freaked out, and it honestly made me like Alan Wake almost a little more because like that song was in it. I love that song so much. But obviously the songs are very impactful. So these songs must have some sort of limited license. And I imagine when you're, you know, these are pretty big bands. Nick Cave and the Bad Seeds, Black. I mean, these are big bands. So to license their music, you know, they probably only had a limited amount of time. And especially in these earlier days of the Xbox 360, there were probably still a lot of question marks. And I think a lot of that got learned through Rock Band and some of the issues they've had, right? Like, you still can't export Beatles Rock Band. But I'm sure the Beatles contract is an ironclad thing. So when they got to do the Beatles Rock Band, like, I'm very sure that that contract is like, you use it for this and only this. And, you know, like, those songs ain't getting out of the game anytime soon. Anyway, so if you didn't already know, Remedy is discounting the game by 90% on Steam. So tonight's really your last chance to get it. It's down to $3 because
that's
90%
off. I'll need to re-download it to make sure I keep it.
Yeah, I think – now here's the thing. I actually think you guys have had a lot of opportunity to get Alan Wake already. I remember they were giving it away for free at one point. I don't remember if it was through a Humble Bundle, maybe. Maybe it was one of those things. But I have a DRM-free version because I think they gave it away for free at one point. And – I would hope some of y'all that have an Xbox One checked out Quantum Break, because that game was pretty awesome, also by Remedy. And when you bought that, you got Alan Wake on backwards compatibility. So I do feel like people have had ample opportunity to check out this game. And, you know, Alan Wake is a pretty cool game. It's a lot of people compare it to Silent Hill, but I would say there's a lot of, like, that scary game stuff mixed with a lot of, like, popular television, especially one of my all-time favorite shows, which, how timely is this? One of my all-time favorite shows is Twin Peaks, right? And I'm sure some of you guys have heard, Showtime's bringing it back next week, which I shouldn't be plugging here because it's going to be on the same time as OLR, but that's why you have digital Hulu and all that stuff. You can watch it on demand and all that stuff. But I think Alan Wake was a game that got a lot of its influence from Twin Peaks, which also, Twin Peaks maybe didn't use a lot of licensed music, but that show in the 90s especially was like, had a hugely impactful soundtrack. Like, the theme song is, like, probably one of the greatest theme songs they ever did for television, honestly. So, anyway. So, this game is being delisted, and it's due to a music licensing issue. So you're not going to be able to download the game or buy it from the storefronts. But my understanding is that you can re-download it. So if you already have the digital rights to it, you'll be able to re-download it. And, of course, if you have a disc-based copy of the game, they can't come to your house and take that away from you, so you still have the rights to the game. But this does put an interesting little monkey wrench in the whole digital games thing, is that some games can expire. What do you guys kind of think about this? Think about this whole Alan Wake thing. Do you think that they should try to renegotiate the music licenses? Because that's another thing they're talking about, is that they may go back to the drawing. I mean, they're not going to just do, like, when they released Beverly Hills 90210, the television show, on DVD, I think they went back and replaced a lot of the music licenses from that time with, like, generic, you know, Muzak that you would hear in an elevator or whatever. They're not going to go back and do that with Alan Wake. They've already said that's a lot harder than you guys think it is to do. So either the songs are there or they're not going to be there. Do you think Remedy should go back and try to renegotiate those licenses, or to get this back up on digital storefronts, or let it go, be done? This game is 7 years old. No one wants it anymore. What do you guys think?
I don't think that they would do it for this, but if they're going to release, like, a remastered version or something like that, they would renegotiate it and maybe do it at that time.
Oh, so if they ever did, like, an Alan Wake, you know, HD. Well, it's weird saying Alan Wake HD, but I get what you're saying. Like, you know, there are some games from last gen that have come back on the 60 frames a second and all this stuff. If they were to give Alan Wake that treatment, absolutely you need to renegotiate that music, which Alan Wake deserves.
Well, that's why I think, because if they sell it right now, I don't think it's that popular. They're not going to make their money back for whatever deal that they have to strike for this. That's why they would need to resell it at, you know, like a full retail value in order to make their money back.
Jamie?
Pretty much the same thing.
Yeah.
I don't think there's any logical reason to do it right now, unless there were plans for re-release. So,
Tiger Claw in chat says, if they bring back the game after they renegotiated an agreement, should they leave the current prices they sold for the game or raise it back to what it originally cost before this? Well, that would really depend on how much they're paying for that music, I would think. They're going to
split the difference.
Yeah, they're going to pass down that cost to you. But at the same time, they're selling it for $3 a pop right now. And because of all the press this story's been getting over the weekend, I'm sure a lot of people are buying it. So I would imagine the musicians are signed on to some type of percentage of proceeds. I mean, it has to be, right? Because they wouldn't want to take a loss.
Usually paid up front, though.
Oh, so like it was some type of
deal.
They've
already recouped their cost.
I see. So yeah, that's true because I've heard of that for like music games, actually. Mm-hmm. Some of those artists in certain large music games that we once talked about on the show got paid $50 for the track. And those tracks are in the game, you know, now. So obviously when you're an indie band, $50 is a big freaking deal. But I'm sure for some
of
these songs.
The exposure as well. I mean, I know you can't work for exposure.
Right.
But getting paid a significant amount, hopefully significant, plus having your name put out there in a way that it wouldn't have been otherwise.
Right. And there is still a little bit of a trade-off, too, is that, you know, there can also be the publicity for, like, you have to put the information in the game about how to get the song on iTunes or something. Like, you know, I've seen that done in games before, that, like, you know, you'll see, like, oh, and available at, you know, rcarecords.com or whatever, you know, the deal is. So, very interesting with all that. Let me see. Going into other comments from chat over at live.vognetwork.com. Cinco de Milo in our chat says, I'm glad they didn't pull a Grand Theft Auto and patch out the music. I hate it when developers retroactively screw with their games. You know, I forgot that Grand Theft Auto had done that for some music. It was only like a very few amount of tracks. But yeah, they did patch in like Grand Theft Auto 4, was it? I think they went out and
San Andreas,
and they patched out some of the music.
Yeah.
But then again, there's also, you know, like some of the older Grand Theft Auto games, because they aren't, I guess, sold digitally back when it was got really big on PlayStation 2. I mean, all those songs are still there. You can't really patch a PS2 game. So,
right.
Yeah, interesting. Let's see. I'll also go into our chat at live.vognetwork.com. JD in chat says, old Konami originals expire too. I think Soichiro Hirata and Akira Yamaoka songs are gone from modern mixes, for instance. Actually, no. Akira Yamaoka songs, I actually know this because I was getting into this in my gaming week, but I played DDR Ace this week, and I did play an Akira Yamaoka song. So they're still showing up. But some of the songs have disappeared, and maybe that's some type of agreement.
It could be just also because the library's getting so huge in those mixes that you got to cut something.
Yeah, very, very true. And then Rama's asking, can you explain more what this game is like? What other games are similar to Alan Wake? Ooh, that's a good question. I mean, the easiest comparison to make is Silent Hill, but I feel like the tone of the game is very different from Silent Hill. The way the game plays might have some similarities, although there's more of a mechanic with the flashlight, and it has been, in all honesty, it's been quite a while since I played it, so I don't remember all the specifics, but I remember the flashlight played a very important type of mechanic that like doesn't exist in Silent Hill, but the tone of the game is very different. Like, it's not... Alan Wake is not as in-your-face, like, gory and creepy in some of those ways. That's why I compare it to Twin Peaks, because Twin Peaks was creepy through the ambience and through the unknowingness of this crazy town in the middle of nowhere. Does that make sense? And I think Alan Wake kind of shared a lot of that in tone, where the violence and all that wasn't always in your face. I mean, there were definitely some scary moments.
Silent Hill wasn't overly violent, though.
It wasn't, but it had its moments. You know what I mean? Yeah. So, like, and then there would be places you go, like, you'd walk into a room and there would be blood everywhere, that type of thing. You know, like, that doesn't, you know.
What about more like everybody's going to the Rapture for that ambience? The creepy, you don't know what's going on?
I like that, except then when you bring in Everybody's Gone to the Rapture, people think about, oh, a game where you do nothing but walk around and listen to story, and that's not really Alan Wake either. There is, you know, a game going on there. So it's kind of, it's a little bit of everything there. Raginator in chat says, think X-Files meets Resident Evil 4 as brought to you by Energizer. I think that's a tie-in to the flashlight play-in, but yeah. Yeah, I guess X-Files is a pretty good comparison, too. That's another show that was very creepy from ambience. So, anyway, it will be interesting to see, if they do go through the motions of relicensing Alan Wake, or maybe someday do an HD, feel silly calling it HD, but a souped-up remix, you know, of Alan Wake or something for a future release. Because who knows what Remedy's going to do next? They haven't announced their next project, right? It doesn't look like Quantum Break may get a sequel, although who knows? I guess anything's possible.
Yeah, I forgot about Quantum Break.
It's a good game. It
looked good. It wasn't enough to sell me on a Xbox One.
Yeah. So. All right. Let's get to our gaming week. So let's talk about the... Sorry, I'm laughing because I just saw the Cinco de Milo in chat says, Alan woke as fuck. That could be a sequel. That's his Stay Woke, Alan Woke. All right. Let's get to our games and the types of video games that we have been playing this week. So let's go over to Dark Sakura. How was your gaming week?
It was okay. It was WoW and Mass Effect Andromeda. I didn't play for a few days because I just downloaded the new patch. And by the way, if anyone does have Origin access right now, the deluxe version is like $40. So just saying. Miitomo and Pokemon Go. It's the usuals. Kind of done. Oh, no, wait. I bought a game, but I didn't start playing it yet. And I bought Shelter 2. Because I heard really good reviews of it. And the deluxe version is on sale. Well, it was on sale when I got it on the App Store. So I bought it to play on my Mac.
Hmm. Nice. All right. We'll go over to Loki then.
This week I did make an attempt to play some different things. Not too much, though. So I decided to come... Randomly, I had read something about We Happy Few. I'm like, oh, shit, I backed that on Kickstarter, and I never got my key for that. So I finally went and, you know, I was looking a bunch of different places to see, oh, maybe it's in my Humble library and stuff. I'm like, holy crap, I have a ton of unclaimed keys in this library right now. So that made me think, oh, maybe I should go look at my Steam library. And so, you know, I've got like almost 600 games on there now. And I was like, okay, well, hell, I'll try, you know, The Seventh Guest because I fondly remember that.
Oh, yeah, speaking of classics, old school games.
Yeah, really old. So I tried playing that. Well, see, Seventh Guest, when I played it at a friend's house. And I played, he was like well into the game. And I remembered it being fun. Apparently, I didn't remember it correctly because that game is boring as fuck. And it does not show its age well. It is... Wow. I mean, that, it's running on ScumVM, but...
That is a problem with a lot of the old full-motion video CD-ROM games is that they have not aged well. And I think most of them have not aged well. And I think a big problem with that is that, you know, the acting in video games, technology in video games has come so far. You know, we're giving away awards now for performances in video games. Whereas right. before, actors and actresses wouldn't touch these CD-ROM motion games until their careers were already going downhill. Hence, you know, no offense, but Dana Plato in Night Trap. What, Tia Carrere had a CD-ROM game years after Wayne's World, right?
Well, I know a lot of it was all FMV. I mean, all the transitions between rooms and everything was all FMV. But I'm, like, thinking, well, this was here. I'm like, why couldn't they have just, like, even somehow, like, created extra frames for this? Because the animation's super choppy. And I get it, it's old. But how hard would that have been to just... insert some extra frames in there so that it kind of smoothed out the animation or maybe speed up some of the stuff because it took forever to get into the game. And then I did like a puzzle and it wasn't really that hard. And then like some of the other puzzles is like, I don't know what the fuck you want me to do with this shit. I mean, I get it. There's clues in the house. I don't want to fucking wait through all these transitions to go find a fucking map to some shit somewhere hidden on a rug or something.
But yeah, it didn't bother you as much in the 90s when that game was originally out because like your computer, you never saw graphics like that on a computer, the transitions. So you were kind of like, you were mesmerized by, ooh, this is so realistic.
Right, yeah. So I just kind of got bored with that really fast. So I deleted it.
Oh my God.
Well, whatever. It's a really small game. I didn't want to play it anymore. So then I went ahead and I was going to play Minecraft on PlayStation 4 because my... PC version, the Windows 10 one's all broken right now. So I was going to play Minecraft, but then it wanted the patch, and I was like, I don't want to wait for this. So then I played Everything, which is that game I was talking about. It's really weird. I still don't understand the point of it. Basically, you play as everything. So you start off as a sheep, and the game has really terrible animation on purpose. So your sheep kind of rolls, like if you know four different animation frames. Which is kind of silly, but I don't really understand the point yet. You're supposed to, like, you know, sing to other animals, which is basically as talking, and then you can actually literally at some point in the game, like, play as everything, like, from microorganisms to plants to the universe. I mean, it's just kind of, I don't know, I don't understand the point yet to it. It's an artsy game, but I bought it because it had really shitty animation, and I thought that was entertaining. So I ended up playing Skyrim. So I played more through Skyrim, just doing some of the quests in there that I hadn't done before, and just kind of playing through that a little bit. So that I sunk a couple hours into that, and yeah. That, and of course, you know, my mobile stuff. I've been doing Pokemon Go daily and still playing that idle clicker thing for Office Space, because actually, each week they do add this, like, new kind of, they kind of mix it up a little bit, so they add, like, a bonus challenge thing, so you can play, like, two different games at once, and that's been entertaining enough, so I do enjoy it. It's a good time kill, but it's not so in-your-face, like, obnoxious as some of the other ones, because actually, you know, the clicking part of it, they have a part where you can tap to earn money, but you honestly earn more money faster through this whole, like, it almost looks like a tiny tower a little bit. Setting that stuff up, you earn money faster than you do a tapping, so there's really no point to do that. I don't know. It's been fun, though.
All right. Is that it?
That's it.
All right. My gaming week has actually been very active, very busy. Sorry, I have a lot to cover this week, but I want to thank... Monday night, we kind of did an impromptu Mario Kart 8 tournament, which I ended up live streaming, and it was kind of... I mean, it wasn't really like an OLR thing or a, you know, the podcast I tape on Monday nights, Reading is Fundamental. I mean, it was kind of a little bit based around that, because it started as, oh, let's have me, Spike, John, maybe Delvin try to all, like, play Mario Kart 8 online at the same time, and it kind of turned into this big, like, Twitter friend of friend thing, and so people were joining in. We had a pretty good turnout. One of our races, we had a full 12 people
in
the race.
So do they have, like, a way to set up tournaments in there, or is it just, like, kind of, hey, let's all play together?
You can set up tournaments, and it was a learning experience, that's for sure, because we had some problems. Like, some people were not able to join the tournament for whatever reason, and then, like, suddenly they would break through and be able to join in. We learned that the clock in Mario Kart 8 makes no freaking sense. It doesn't follow daylight savings time, so you have to set everything an hour earlier than you really want it to be. Yeah, which does, like, it would be very easy for Nintendo to just display the current time is beep, and then, like, that would have
fixed all
those problems.
That's built
problems.
Into all electronics. Why can't that?
I know. Well, I'm not.
Isn't the clock on your system? Doesn't that have daylight savings? Why can't it read the system time?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, in listening to Bobby's show earlier, he does explain that as a programmer, time zones are a lot harder than you think. But I just think this would be an easy. Here's the weird thing. I don't remember this being a problem on the Wii U version. So maybe there's something weird about how it ported over and the Switch. I'm not going to overthink it. I'm just going to tell you all it was an issue. So just be aware of it with the clocks. But otherwise, we had a lot of fun. It did get to an interesting point where, because there were so many people that were playing in the tournament, you know, we got up to 13, 14 people. It split people into, now we have one room of six people here and another room of six people over here. And some people were frustrated with it because, you know, I'm streaming it, but they weren't in the match that was on the stream. And I was like, I set it up this way to try to avoid people feeling like that and, you know, mixing it up after every race. But it's just kind of like inevitable, I guess, that sometimes happens.
So,
but,
like, so when it's splitting it up, does that mean that they're doing six in one race, or is it just splitting up the lobbies?
It's splitting up the lobbies because we set it up as a tournament. So it's still the same tournament, but it's like there's one race going on over here and another going on over here. Does that make sense?
Can you, like, watch those races as they go on?
No, it's not that. It's not that. Involved. It's
God,
Nintendo. It's Nintendo. You, as you join a race, you might find that there's already a race in progress, so you can watch it finish, and then you join that lobby. But that's about as far as it goes with it. I don't. Again, maybe it's in there, and I just haven't
is
looked for it.
Is that the same
way as
it works
thing.
On the Wii U, or is that just like
the same way it works on the Wii U? They haven't really changed a lot of that.
Damn stupid.
It's not as bad as you think, but...
Well, I would think, though, if you're doing, like, a tournament, if you're setting up brackets and stuff, wouldn't you want to see how the other races
it's
go?
Not,
well,
no,
let's
no,
just
no,
twiddle
no,
our fingers and figure out who
won. It's not that kind of tournament. It's a points-based tournament. You earn point. Like, if you come in first in the race of so many people, you get this many points. If you come in last, you get, like, 1 point. So that's how it's set up. It's not a knockout tournament type of thing. Like, you're thinking, like, a fighting game tournament.
Well,
it's
I'm
different.
Thinking just, like, a tournament whatsoever. If you have a lobby of, like, if you have a group of 16 people that are playing a tournament, wouldn't you want to see the other matches going on? Or are they supposed to be going at the same time?
They're going on at the same time.
That's silly. Why? Yeah. Yeah, why just... would you do that? Just why can't you put 16 people in one race?
Ask Nintendo.
Is it because the game can't handle that many?
Well, yeah, I think your cap. I think it's a hard cap for 12 people in one race. I don't think you can add more than 12. That would be a lot of objects and crap going on the field. If you want the game to run at 60 frames a second, and so much, I cut them some slack there. That's more. The original Mario Kart was only 8 people on the track at one time. So
I mean, yeah, I get it. It's a Nintendo system. I mean, we're not talking like Battlefield or something. I think you're being, run 64 player matches, you know, with full HD.
Okay. Let's talk about another racing game I played this week. Forza Horizon 3 on the Xbox One, right? Those races limited to 12. So watch your step there, Loki. Yeah, it's limited, not just
to
Nintendo.
Limited to 12 because it's a big open world that's got a stream in there versus a tiny little map that they make for the race.
All right. Anyway, thank you to those that were participating in the tournament. I appreciate it. I played a little bit of Forza Horizon 3 this week because Bobby was live streaming it earlier this week doing the Hot Wheels thing. Our pal Bree with Sakai GDA, she was streaming it and doing the Hot Wheels thing. And I was like, man, I really need to make more progress on this game. And I think I was in a racing game mode because of Mario Kart 8. So I actually fired up Forza Horizon 3 on the PC and was playing that because I wanted to see how it kind of compared to the Xbox One. And it runs well on my system. I had a good time playing it. So I'm going to do that as the post show game tonight. So we'll take a look at that on my live stream over at twitch.tv/RobRoberts after the show. So I was playing some Forza Horizon 3. Also, this is a big accomplishment for me this week in gaming. Diablo 3, Wednesday night, PlayStation 4. I got my platinum trophy. So I got every... And that was something I said on this show I was going to do like 3 years ago. So I finally did it! Wednesday night, I got my trophy, and I actually live streamed that because I figured that was an occasion worth streaming. But 500 bounties, that's the trophy that took me the longest. It was faster for me to level up all of the classes to 70 than it was to do 500 bounties. But the trick is, for those of you Diablo players, you probably already know this, take your main quote-unquote character and just do enough greater rifts to get your gem of ease, the XP gem, up to level 25 so you can socket it in any weapon. And then it drops the item level requirement of the weapon to level 1 and provides a huge boost. And so what you do, you put the gem in your stash, roll a, let's say, Crusader or whatever new character you want to do, and then craft a weapon at the table that's a legendary level 70 weapon, socket the gem into it, and your first 40 levels are done in like 5 minutes. You just fly through the beginning levels, and then, you know, you only have to worry about the later ones when the XP boost isn't enough to carry you through. So, I did all the Diablo 3 stuff, so that was exciting to get the Platinum Trophy, because I'm not sure I have any other Platinum Trophies. I think that was my first one. I think I've gotten every trophy in other games, but they didn't have Platinums. I got, like, a gold for getting through everything.
I've gotten a few Platinums. I know, like, in the LEGO Marvel games, I've done those, but those are, like, cake. I'm trying to get Platinum in Skyrim, but that's going to be a pain in the ass because they have, you know, branching achievements for, like, what was it, being a vampire and being, like, a werewolf and stuff. And I don't want to be a werewolf or vampire in those, but I'm going to have to do that for a little bit so that I can get all those and then go back to a previous save, which good luck with that because there's, like, a million saves I have for Skyrim.
Yeah. Good luck tracking all that. So now I don't know what Platinum I'll work on next. Who knows? But
Overwatch?
I don't know about that. I'm not good enough at Overwatch, I don't think, to do that. I mean, Overwatch is a lot of fun to play, don't get me wrong. And I did play some of that on Friday night with Alan, but not enough to really get the trophies for that. So that was some of my console and PC gaming this week. Didn't do in the AR gaming as well. There's an event going on in Ingress. I'm like halfway through it, so I'm trying to finish that one out just to be done with it and get my stupid little medal just because those limited time things, if you don't do it during the limited time, you feel like you miss out. Still been trying to do Pokemon Go. I haven't been as active in Pokemon Go just because I kind of feel like that game is in a little bit of a lull. Like, I like the events.
The events kind of help out because...
Yeah, those things have really helped.
Yeah.
But I feel like... I just feel like the gym game is garbage in that game
now. Yeah.
And the big rumor is Niantic's going to do something with it. And we're all kind of waiting to see, like, what is the anti-spoof, anti-cheat. Like, people have actually, like, data mined these newer versions of Pokemon Go that come out. And there's talk in there about raids. So now you might be raiding gyms with people. And that could be very interesting. So, yeah. I mean, Ingress is more fun when you play with other people and you can do stronger things. You build stronger portals when you're playing with other people. So it make a lot of sense that maybe Pokemon Go wants to do
well,
some of that.
Well, they still don't have like any sort of team-based stuff yet because right. we have teams, but it doesn't really do anything.
And to be clear, before I get corrected on it, you can do two people at once attacking a gym. But that even that is it's like if you don't start at the exact same time, it's kind of buggy and like there's all these little quirks that go with it. So, yes, it's there, but it's kind of it's like the only way to take out a Blissey is to do two people. So anyway, so just waiting to see what continues in Pokemon Go. But otherwise, hell yeah, I still need to collect my Stardust bonus every day because that's the hardest stuff to get if you're not doing gyms. Anyway. What else have I been playing? So yesterday, my pal Shane and I took a road trip to Concord. We went to round one and played some of the Japanese arcade games. And what was really cool about it is that we met our pals Captain Spike and First Mate Slidekick from GameBuoy.org. GameBuoy.org. They were there, another show on the network here. And, of course, my pal, my longtime pal Extrafer from other shows like Courthouse and stuff, and his partner. So it was like all six of us met up and played some games. So it was a lot of fun. It was like a, kind of a little reunion of sorts from all these people that have done podcasts together and just people that are my friends. So, you know, we hung out, played some of the games. I got to play a little bit of DDR Ace, which I don't usually do a lot of DDR at my age, but I had fun. I was playing. I was that guy that got up on the machine and I would do one or two of the new songs, but then I was like, I want to go back and like go into DDR fifth mix and I'm going to play like Insertion and like all these like old ass songs. So I was having fun with that. But here's the game that I played more than any other at round one. The arcade version of Theatrhythm they have. And it's different because Theatrhythm, of course, is a DS game. And so it's mostly based on the touchpads. So you're doing, you know, you're tapping the screen, you're moving the stylus different directions. Well, obviously, the arcade doesn't really have the touchscreen. Well, actually, what's weird, it does. You can actually touch the screen to pick your songs and all that stuff, but that's not how you control the game. You have these buttons and like nubs. So like imagine like extend your hand out, your thumbs would be on a button, the palms of your hands would be on these nubs. And so when it's time to do like the little tap tap tap, you use your thumbs to press the buttons, and when it's time to do like the up down like those swipes, you push that direction on the nubs. So it really kind of changes the game a lot, obviously, but it also feels like something they could do on a PlayStation 4. Because you could do this with analog controllers, so it's interesting to me that it hasn't been ported over there yet. But anyway, but yeah, the arcade version was a lot of fun. I actually bought the card that works with Theatrhythm system because it's also for Groove Coaster and all this stuff. So I actually bought the card and I was like saving my progress, and yeah, I was having fun. I wish I could have understood more of what was in the menus. Because it's 100% Japanese. And I, as you guys know, I don't read or speak a lick of it. So I didn't understand. I mean, I kind of like figured some of it out. Like I was like, oh, there's like a Soul Calibur-esque red versus blue thing going on. So at the end of the match, you would choose like which crystal on the battlefield do you want to represent? And you could like either take energy away or add energy to it. So there's all this kind of funky stuff going on there. But it's so interesting. And Theatrhythm, I think, really shows like how much the arcade games have kind of taken from mobile phones, you know, and you see a lot of this in the Japanese games as well, is that like, oh, you get a daily logon bonus for signing in, and like when you do have the card, you unlock more characters, you can actually purchase songs with in-game credits that would then show up. Like, so I bought the Mugamog song from Final Fantasy 14, and so I could actually play that in a later game. So just like lots of neat little stuff like that. So yeah, I spent a lot of time playing Theatrhythm. I played like six games in a row. So, which doesn't sound like much, but when you consider, you know, it's three songs a game, it's a good, you know, at least 10 to 15 minutes. I mean, I spent a good time playing that. So anyway, SSGO100 Matt in chat says, don't sell yourself short. You've been reading Japanese for 10 plus years during the release dates. Oh yeah. And I do such a good job of it too. Huh? So anyway, there you go. I played some of that and some of the other music games. I played some Beatmania 2DX. God, I already forgot the name of the new one. Cinnabuzz. That was it.
Cinnabon.
That's what it was. 2DX Cinnabon.
I want Cinnabon.
was the new one. So I was playing that, but the volume on the machine was way too low. And I tried to do all the tricks with the equalizer. It wouldn't work because it's right next to Groove Coaster. And they had Groove Coaster at like the highest level it could go. So like I could kind of get through 2DX. But the minute somebody came up and put their card into Groove Coaster to play, I couldn't hear a goddamn thing. All I could hear was that Groove Coaster machine. So round one needs to balance some of their noise out a little bit. Or I just need to not be stupid and keep forgetting my headphones at home, because I could be plugging my headphones into these games and then I wouldn't have to worry about any of this stuff. But alas, I forgot. So there you go. Yeah, and that's what Rama in chat says. Headphones? Question mark. Yeah, I forgot. All right, leave me alone. I guess, you know, it's not like round one isn't in a fucking mall, so I could have just walked out, bought headphones, and brought them back. But then it's like, I have like a million pairs of headphones here at home. Like, Alan would be so mad at me if it's like, oh, because I'm stupid and I forgot I bought more headphones while I was at the mall. He wouldn't really get mad, but he would roll his eyes. So, there you go. Act Deft in chat says, Rob Roberts, did Thea Trithem Arcade have Crazy Chocobo? Act Deft, you're going to be proud of me when I answer that with, I didn't look for it. I don't think it was there, though. I think there was, like, one song, because that was from Final Fantasy 13 2, right? I think they had, like, one song from 13 2 in it, and it wasn't that. So, there you go. Anyway, I have talked plenty about my gaming week. There it was. So, I did a lot this week. I had a pretty diverse week there. So, there you go. Yes, Dark Sakura.
We need to have a momentous event.
Yes, what's that?
Right now.
What? Oh, you want to do this?
It's happening.
Food tasting here?
It's happening.
Okay, so tell our listeners what you found at the store.
Waffles and syrup Oreos.
I've been wanting to try these. I have. So I'm really curious about this.
I saw it. It was so random. So go ahead and kick us off while I lift the tab.
All right. Well, I want to go into housekeeping real quick, because I do have a couple things to get into for housekeeping tonight. Oh. First off, because I forgot to do it on the call, I want to embarrass Bobby Blackwolf for the late happy birthday, Bobby Blackwolf. He's years old, but he'll tell you he's 29. So happy birthday, Bobby Blackwolf.
Put this in your mouth.
Oh, well, if you insist. All right, so waffles and syrup Oreo. Here we go.
Yeah, this is great radio.
I know, but you know what? Deal. It's food. If I gave you a cookie, you'd stop what you're doing too.
It's weird.
That is weird.
It's not bad.
It doesn't... I don't know if that really tastes like waffles and syrup to me.
I taste maple.
It tastes like one of those like super basic shortbread cookies.
With maple.
I don't even really taste the maple.
I taste the maple.
These are a little bit of a letdown to me. I don't know. All right. Anyway. All right. Other housekeeping. Remember, we won't be here at the end of June. June 25th. This is the day we're not going to be here. But our 15th anniversary show is June 18th.
Yay.
And E3 is coming up. June 11th, we're going to be cut short by Bethesda, but we'll have a big E3 spectacular on June 11th. That'll be fun. None of us, sadly, going to E3 this year.
I'm not sad about it.
But yeah.
Fuck that noise.
We've gone into the reasons extensively on previous episodes, and the long and the short of it is E3 just isn't what it used to be. So
but
we don't really go.
Catch San Francisco people at Pride.
I'm very curious, though, to see what happens with the public being open to. Because I do know some people that are going. In fact, Captain Spike from Game Buoy is trying to go. I think he has the tickets, but he just, you know, he's trying to juggle stuff with work. So I'll be very curious to hear his thoughts on it. I'm not sure if the gals from Ninja's Electric Sisterhood, I don't know if... Ninja Sister and Pandalicious are going. I haven't. They go almost every year, but there was just a wedding that happened. So I'm not sure if they are actually going, but we'll see. So I'll hopefully be talked. Oh, Bobby Blackwolf says they got rejected. What? This is all part of that stupid. The way we're opening this up to the public is by rejecting all of the independent media, which is part of the reason why I think this whole thing is ridiculous. But anyway, so Bobby Blackwolf says Ninja Sister will be in LA and going to parties. And Rama says Panda just got married. Yeah, I know that. But yeah, so Ninja Sister's going to LA and just going to the parties. Well, that's one way to do E3, I'll tell you that. So, all right. And so what on the 25th when we're not here, it's the show's being canceled because I'm taking a trip to Chicago. I'm actually going to Chicago Pride for the very first time is happening. But Dark Soccer, you just shouted there. You're going to San Francisco Pride the same day, right?
I am.
All right. So that's awesome that we're covering different stuff. So cool. All right. Let's get into some gaming news and what's going on in video games.
This is so fucking weird.
Yeah, I don't know if I like these as much as like the Red Velvet
ones.
Well,
you're keeping the bag.
But great. Just when I'm supposed to, I'm trying to lose weight because I have a Pride event coming up. But oh well. Anyway.
Start tomorrow.
Let's get into video game news. Loki.
So Square Enix has announced that they have decided to withdraw from business. Well, their English in this press release is not very good, but decided to withdraw from the business of IO Interactive, or doing business with IO Interactive. So right now they're starting discussions with potential new investors and are currently in negotiations to secure investment, meaning that they're looking to sell the company. Of course, IO Interactive did a lot of different things, including, you know, Kane & Lynch, the Hitman series, and new other games. So, interesting to see what happens with that.
So, I'm assuming the transition to the episodic Hitman didn't work out so well. I didn't think it was doing so bad. In fact, I've heard a lot of positive stuff around the Hitman, so the episodic stuff. Those are not usually games that I get into, so I myself have not really explored these games. I don't know about you guys in chat over at live.vognetwork.com. If you guys have thoughts on the Hitman transition to episodic, I'll kind of rely on you guys to tell me if it's been a good thing or a bad thing or what, but my assumption is that Risk didn't pay off or Square wouldn't be looking to unload them right now. I mean,
but are there like expectations for the franchise too high? I remember with like Tomb Raider, they were like, oh, yeah. We only made, was it $300 million or something like that? That's terrible.
Yeah, we only sold so many copies, and it was like, that actually sounds like a lot of copies that you sold, sir. And well, but to be fair, Tomb Raider did get a sequel, and the sequel was extremely well received. And haven't there been rumors and rumblings that a third one, I mean, it seems kind of obvious that like they have this whole engine built. The games are doing well enough that
probably going to be another one. And they're doing a movie, aren't they?
Yes, there is a movie for sure. Yeah, because there was some photos that leaked from the set and so forth. So, I mean, it's very possible a third game is going to show up at this E3. In fact, I thought I heard that Rise of the Tomb Raider did well on PlayStation 4. They actually called that out as part of Square Enix's financials, which
cool,
was
maybe we can stop this nonsense of console exclusives for a year.
Oh yeah, I would bet if there's a third Tomb Raider game, that console exclusive stuff ain't happening. It's going to be out everywhere at once. But I would imagine if they're doing a third game, it's probably cheaper for them to just use the same engine they developed and spent all the resources on in the first game, which I assume is what they're using in the second game, and then continue on into the third game, right? So
right.
They're kind of getting the most bang for their buck from that engine.
If it works for what they need, I mean, yeah. If it's able to handle whatever they need to render, I mean, sure, why not?
Okay, so some folks in chat have played Hitman. Tiger Claw hasn't. It doesn't sound like he's played it, but saying that new Hitman game was such a huge success that its future is in doubt. I wonder why. So, yeah, kind of weird. But MXC in chat says, I was super nervous about the episodicness, but the new Hitman is fantastic. Each stage is so big and full of things to potentially do, and by parceling them out as episodes, you really got the time to learn each level. So it doesn't sound like this episode. So
it didn't
thing
look
was
bad.
So yeah, it does.
Just not my type of game, but I like watching videos of people playing it.
Yeah. So, well, a bummer to IO Interactive, but at least, I mean, for what silver lining we can find, at least Square Enix didn't like just close the studio and lay everybody off.
And
we're not talking about job loss,
I mean,
yet, right?
They could be picked up by somebody else and continue on with whatever new franchise they want to develop.
But would they get to keep the Hitman IP, or would that stay with Square Enix?
I would imagine that would stay with Square Enix.
Interesting.
Well, I don't know. I mean, it depends on what they're negotiating to sell. If they're selling the studio and the IP, then maybe.
I wonder if they would give Hitman to another studio like Crystal Dynamics, or maybe even in Japan somewhere or something, or if they would just put the series on ice for a little while. Who knows?
There wasn't enough cup noodle in Hitman, apparently.
Oh, stop it. All right, let's move on to another big series. Of course, as we are creeping more and more closer to E3, there's a lot of rumors and things that are coming out. But this one's got even some screenshots to prove it, and that is the future for Assassin's Creed. Now, here's the interesting thing about Assassin's Creed. It's kind of got two working titles right now. I guess the original working title of the game was Assassin's Creed Origins, but now they're saying the Assassin's Creed game, the title is Assassin's Creed Empire. Sounds like it's going to be the new Assassin's Creed
game. Yeah, it can't
be
Origins, because I think they've been using that as a subtitle for other things.
Yeah, so that was the working title. So it sounds like the actual title may be Empire. Now, keep in mind, Assassin's Creed has been on ice. It didn't get a game last year because of the whole fiasco that happened with the last game that they did. So, you know, they've had a little more time to work on this game. And apparently a screenshot leaked out. There was a Reddit user that actually leaked this picture. And it sounds like it could have been internal. They're thinking there's some stuff in the name. Well, it says shout out to Ashraf, and possibly saying, you know, it's name checking this guy, but it probably isn't this guy, who's an actual Ubisoft staffer who worked on Black Flag and so forth. So who knows? It could have been an internal thing. I would think it's a smart thing to do to get a little hype for your game. Why not, quote unquote, leak a screenshot to Reddit and let the internet hype on that for a little while and let all the game blogs and podcasts talk about it like we're doing now. So anyway, there's this, it's a picture of a picture, so it's not like an actual dump from the screen. It's a picture of a monitor, but it actually shows a character on a boat who's wielding a bow and arrow wearing a shield on their back. So you can actually see, and it looks like they're on a boat again, which indicates there could be some more naval things going on here.
I'm on a boat.
It also shows that the mission is called Assassinate the Crocodile. It sounds like very serious business, although the crocodile could be code name for an individual, you know, somebody on another
boat. Peter Pan.
Do not kill Peter Pan. So anyway, interesting. And apparently it actually says in the text for the mission, follow Shadia to Kenut's villa. I'm probably mispronouncing these names, sorry. But those names have to do with the Queen of Egypt. So this is possibly like an Egypt-based game. Who knows? But some other rumors about the game is that apparently the game is huge. It is an open world experience set in Egypt, telling the tale of the original Assassin's Guild. Sounding like it's a game, they are saying it's as big as Skyrim, which, seeing how Zelda Breath of the Wild did, that stuff is all the rage right now. This, let's take the vast open worldness and adapt it to our game. And for Zelda Breath of the Wild, that has actually worked out very, 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 very well for them. So it'll be interesting. What do you think of Assassin's Creed going to a open world, large format?
It was pretty open world as it was, just not a huge environment, as long as it's interesting and fun.
Mm-hmm.
I still don't want to play it, but...
Now, also, they're talking about that this game actually will have two protagonists in it. There will be a pair of protagonists. It's a male and a female, which, if you remember, one of the reasons the Assassin's Creed Unity game got a lot of shit was the whole line about rendering females is hard. Remember that whole thing? So,
well, they did show examples of how hard it was to render anything. So.
Yes, exactly. So Ubisoft may be trying to do a little better there by... I don't know if there is two protagonists you will ping pong and play a little bit of each, or if you get to pick one or the other, or what the deal is there. But it sounds like they're going to have a man and a woman for you to choose from in the new Assassin's Creed game. So interesting. So we'll see what happens with this. So I assume much more information to come at E3. This will probably be a big highlight at an Ubisoft press conference, assuming they do one, but they do every year.
Yeah. I think they're doing
it. Did they already time it? I didn't know they announced the time.
I think they're doing Maybe I just assume they are.
They do. Yeah, they do one every year. Hopefully, Aisha Tyler's back to host it. I enjoy her as a host. I know she gets mixed reviews, but she is a gamer. She loves her Gears of War and stuff. So, you know, I'm all for her being a host again at Ubisoft. So,
at least she's better than... who's the other comedian that they had before?
The guy from Community who was on The Soup. Joel McHale.
Not Joel McHale. Before him. There was it's the other white comedian that was so funny. I don't remember.
Well, there's so many.
I can see his face, but
Carrot
I can't.
Top, Rob no, Schneider.
No, he was in the stupid. God, I can see his stupid face, but I can't think of his stupid name.
Maybe somebody in chat knows.
I don't know.
Dark Tetsuya's is Jamie Kennedy.
Yes, thank you.
Oh God,
yes,
I forgot.
Jamie Kennedy.
I had erased that from my mind. He's not funny.
Exactly. Exactly.
He's the guy from Scream that everybody
He's
liked.
He's only comedian by occupation. I mean.
I forgot he had done that. That's right. He did do that. All right.
Yeah, Joel McHale is all right. I really wish I had cable because I'd still watch The Soup.
Aisha Tyler's just busy, though, but I think she lives in L.A. That's where they do The Talk, right? Because The Talk is
Is she on Talk Show now, too?
Yeah. Well, she's on the CBS has their own version of The View called The Talk with, like, Julie Chen and the girl that was on Roseanne all grown up, Sharon Osbourne. That's her show. And Aisha Tyler is one of the panelists on that show. She has been for like 2 years, Loki.
Yeah, because, you know, I watch all those morning women talk
shows.
Well,
maybe your wife makes you, because your wife makes you watch a lot of TV.
Like, when am I going to have time to do that shit? I mean, seriously. Oh, I better sit down for the talk to figure out what... I want to hear their opinion about all the internet news I read yesterday.
But she's busy. Okay, so one of the few shows I watch on Netflix is Chelsea Handler. Like, don't judge me. I love her. But Aisha Tyler was on Chelsea's show, and she's got a movie coming out. Like, she directed and wrote a movie. Or I don't know if she wrote it, but she directed it. And so she's probably busy. I would be very surprised if she does the Ubisoft thing.
She's very busy. Like, what is it? For Archer, doing talk show, doing her Who's Line?
She's like the female Ryan Seacrest.
Ryan Seacrest, dude, you hate on that guy, but man, that guy fucking works. He's got employment out the ass.
Yeah. It's he's got more jobs than any of us do, so you gotta do that. Jamie, I feel like you're dying to say something.
I was about ready to say, though, she has more talent.
Fair enough.
No, I'd agree. I mean, I like Ryan Seacrest, but I love Aisha Tyler, so there you go.
Remember, where there's a woman, there's a way.
And Ryan Seacrest, I don't believe, is a gamer. Aisha Tyler is, so there's that. All right, anyhow. Wasn't this supposed to be a story about Assassin's Creed, and now it's turned into a let's talk about Aisha Tyler's career?
Maybe Aisha Tyler can voice a new assassin in...
Why not? She was a character in Gears of War, if I remember right. She was always a big fan of that series. So anyway, or it was a Halo. I swear she showed up in some video game, though.
Now, I know that Conan O'Brien was a character in Halo 5.
That's right.
Andy were
that's right. That oh, awesome. My God. All right, let's move on to something else. This is the news story I don't want to talk about, but we need to, right, Dark Sakura?
I can't sigh any louder for the,
says
for
it
the
all.
Phone or for the mic. We love our Mass Effect. We mostly love BioWare. Mostly. But this is just... I really don't know what to make of it. So basically, BioWare Montreal is being turned into a support studio. And that means that their work is being moved on to other franchises. A big group of the BioWare Montreal employees were moved over to work on Star Wars Battlefront 2, and the rest of them are going on to another property that's codenamed Dylan. And
that's that other sci-fi game they're working on, because you know BioWare's got a new IP that they're doing.
Yeah, I know.
And the rumor is it's an answer to Destiny. It's going to be that whole type of thing, which I kind of shudder like you at first, too. But then, Darkstalker, I think about like how fun multiplayer is in Mass Effect when it works. So the first thing they need to do with Dylan, fucking fix Origin or don't run the game through it. I cannot stress this enough.
You know they won't do anything because Origin is their baby, whatever.
But anyway, sorry, Dark Sakura, but I had to get that out.
But anyway, it doesn't mean that there won't be another Mass Effect game. It means they're still supporting Mass Effect, you know, maintaining the servers, making sure everything is supposedly working right, bringing out patches. And we did just get a new add-on. But at the same time, we really don't know what that's going to spell for the future of Andromeda for right now.
Since I'm completely clueless into the whole Mass Effect series, wasn't Andromeda developed by a different BioWare team than the first three?
Yes, it was. Montreal did not do the first three games. The first three games were, I forget, Edmonton?
I think so.
So
what happened to them?
They're working on the Dylan game.
Yeah.
So Montreal, however, developed DLC for Mass Effect 3. They did this.
And it was good.
The Citadel DLC, in my opinion, was... Oh, no. Citadel DLC was... No. Which one?
Omega.
They did Omega, and that one was kind of...
It
was okay.
Omega was okay. It was pretty fun.
But Citadel was great.
Citadel was wonderful. It was basically everyone's fanfics come to life.
Yeah.
So maybe they're going to take them off of Mass Effect and bring back the original team to Mass Effect.
Well, the problem is...
The original team's working on Dylan.
Well, and then a lot of...
They're going to be working on Dylan forever.
A lot of the original team is gone. Casey Hudson, gone. Like, you know, some of the story people, gone.
A good number of people left already on their own.
So, you know, I don't think they can exactly get the band all back together again. Well, do you want to say more on this? Because I got my own take, but I don't want to interrupt you.
No, go ahead.
Okay. So I just, I mean, oh God, I'm so confused with this because I'm disappointed, but I'm not surprised. The minute the reaction to this game all over the internet was negative, I was not surprised that this is the inevitable endpoint we're at, is that the game is going to be put on hold for a little bit, I guess kind of like Assassin's Creed was. But then again, we weren't getting new Mass Effect games every year. So my concern is that it's going to be a very long time before we get another Mass Effect game. In a way, I might be part of the problem. I started, well, I mean, I bought the game, so I'm not, but I started playing Mass Effect Andromeda. I didn't finish it. But the reason I didn't finish it is because BioWare came out and said they're going to patch a whole bunch of stuff. So I said, you know what? I'll just wait and play this one that has the fully realized romances and all this other stuff.
Which that patch, I think, just came out.
It does not change the Gil romance or any of that stuff. Mm. It just, it does other stuff, like outfits and things.
But see, isn't that kind of like the weird point, though? Like, we kind of are all doing that with these games. It's like they come out, it's like, well, I guess I'll just play it when it's finished patch. Like, Just Cause 3, when it came out, was a piece of shit. It ran fucking poorly. And I was like, well, I'll just wait until it, you know, it's patched to play it. Final Fantasy 15, when it came out, there's a bunch of stuff wrong with it, and they have the patch in stuff to fix things. Okay, then we'll play it then when it's finished patch. And now at Mass Effect Andromeda, just fucking release your games working.
I played it right after it came out, and I had no problem with it. The animation issues weren't terribly distracting.
That's the thing. That's exactly right. A lot of that shit was blown way out of proportion.
It really wasn't that bad at all. It was people nitpicking.
Exactly.
And I thought some of it was fucking funny.
Most of the shit on the internet is from people who didn't fucking play it. And that's the thing that pisses me off more than anything. However, and this is a big however, I also think this game should have been delayed 6 more months. It should have been a holiday release, and almost any Mass Effect fan I talk to agrees with this.
Yeah.
So ultimately, the decisions was EA, I'm assuming it had to be, to put this game out.
EA's CEO did put out a statement about it. They were really happy with how BioWare was doing and how they were treating Mass Effect.
Mm-hmm.
And the quote here is, "Our expectations for Mass Effect are still strong for the future and the franchise overall. But they are putting focus on live service games." So.
Yeah, and Dungeon Buster follows that up with, you know, kind of a same thing, is that EA saying they still have great confidence in BioWare and all this stuff. Of course they do, because Andromeda ended up being a good game. And EA shares some of the blame for why it came out of the oven a little early. Mm-hmm. And again, my other biggest bitch about Mass Effect Andromeda, and no, I'm not going to shut up about this until they fix Origin, I am fucking pissed that I did a match online where I used consumables, which is something that, you know, either you use the in-game currency to get or you pay them money to get. And I got kicked out of the match with 5 fucking seconds to go, didn't get credit for a goddamn thing, and lost my consumables. And it's Origin's fault. So EA shares some of the responsibility for why Mass Effect is as borked as it is. So,
which isn't really all that borked.
Which isn't really all that borked, except for some of these things that I'm not letting go, like the online thing. But the single player experience is fine and all that stuff. And it is disappointing to know that it's not going to get DLC. Now, the original Mass Effect game didn't really have DLC. I mean, it did, but it wasn't that it wasn't nearly as expansive as the DLC in Mass Effect 2 and 3.
But the game's already so big.
Yeah.
It really is. Yeah. Huge, and there's so much to do. Like, I could beat the first Mass Effect in maybe a week if I played a little bit every day. And this one took me 3 weeks of steady playing to beat. Now, I didn't have a lot of time in one sit down to play, but, you know, I played for 2 to 3 hours a night every night. And I was going for almost full completion. I wanted to at least, you know, keep certain people alive. But I was super happy with it. And, you know, it's like you were saying, the only people who were, you know, pissy about it were the people who weren't playing it. Oh, well, I heard this. Did you fucking play it? Well, no. Then shut up. I don't care. Well, this blog said, did you play it? No, but I watched a video. No, shut up. Shut up. Play the damn game and form your own fucking opinion. Learn to think for yourself.
I don't think it's fair, to be honest. You know why? Why am I going to invest $60 in a game that looks that fucking janky. I'm
it
sorry.
It doesn't look janky. It's a great
Based
game.
Based on the videos I've seen, it looks fucking janky.
But you are watching like 2-second clips
no,
of
I'm
a
not. I'm
80
watching
hour
long
experience.
Plays of the game. And I'm sorry. It looks fucking janky. I'm not investing $60 into a game that may be patched later on. No, I don't think that's fair that I should have to do that. My point is, it should come out of the gate
looking
nice. I want to
know
nice.
What you're looking at that looks so janky because it's
sorry.
Beautiful.
Look, I'm sorry. I cannot take this from somebody who is a fan of Skyrim and Bethesda and the shit that they get away with every time. Why are you giving them a pass?
Because their games are janky. I know that going into it. Is Mass Effect advertised as a janky-ass game?
But it's not.
I think that says it all right. That's fine. I'm going to take that answer. Y'all draw your own
but
conclusions.
But it's not. I mean, maybe people are playing with shitty graphic cards. I don't know. I upgraded my graphics card in the middle of my playthrough, and I had zero problems. It was fluid. The animations were fine.
I'm just saying.
It was perfect.
If you're trying to introduce new people into the series, and you're trying to get them interested, just the whole animations and everything, yeah, it does take away from the whole impact of scenes and stuff. And I don't want to play that. Also, I don't want to play it because it's not broken enough.
So, yeah. I was like, I know, that's the thing, Loki, is that, this is where like Jamie and I are at, is that in Skyrim, you have the exact same problems, but yet you're giving that a pass. And I think, and to be fair, Jamie and I have a history with Mass Effect, and we've always loved the game, so yes, we're going to defend it a little more. And you've always been a fan of the Elder Scrolls game, so you're going to defend that a little more. This is just that whole gamer thing coming into play.
See, the Elder Scrolls games were pretty. I just couldn't get into them. They were kind of boring.
I don't think they're pretty. They're long.
I think Elder Scrolls is pretty, actually. I would say Elder Scrolls is a pretty game.
I thought Skyrim was certainly pretty.
Yeah, especially the HD.
I'm actually kind of enjoying Elder Scrolls Online for a little bit. I need to go back and play some more. But the problems with animation, because I played pre-patch and post-patch, they were really minor. Really minor. Like, you had to be looking for them.
So anyway, I think the one thing we can all agree on here, as much as the chat room is like, yeah, OLR throwdown. Look, at the end of the day, we're going to disagree on some games, but we're still going to eat Oreos, waffles, cookies together. So here's the thing. The one thing it sounds like we can all agree on, the game should have been delayed.
And the other thing that we can agree on, Skyrim is janky.
Well, yeah, of course it is. That's why I like it. It is incredibly janky.
To Loki's credit, Loki is the only person that I've seen entertained by Driver 3 for hours and hours and hours because of how fucking janky it is.
I do want to ask this. Which people who played through Mass Effect Andromeda did not complain about Sam? Shut the fuck up, Sam. I don't care about the weather, the radiation. Bless whoever made the Shut Up Sam mod.
Which, didn't they just patch that in the game officially?
I don't know.
I think they did.
But Sam talks too much.
All right, let's see. I gotta grab some comments from chat here. Stoppy in chat says, Sky, a game has to make a good first impression. I can name a handful of games that look like shit but are fun to play, but I'm not going to cry about people not giving them a chance because that's not how consumers work. If it was free or close to it, that would be a different issue. Speaking of free, let me tell you about a game that had a huge turnaround. Diablo 3. Remember what a fucking garbage heap that game was when it first came out?
I thought it was fun.
But it even when it very first came out,
yeah, I thought it was fun.
It was.
I actually
played
it more right after it came out than after they changed everything.
It was rough. Well, I'm not with you with because it came when they finally got rid of the auction house. Basically, when they did the expansion, that game turned right around and now it's fantastic. Or another one that I've played way, Final Fantasy 14, the worst MMO I ever played in my life when it first came out. Now the best. So. Well, I should say one of the best. So, I mean, you know, games kind of can turn around in that regard. But there's something about those two particular games and those two particular franchises where, and maybe it's just because of the weight of companies like Blizzard or the fact that it was an MMO with Square Enix and stuff, where those games were kind of afforded a second chance that most games aren't given. And I agree, at least in the extent of the first impression of a game is so important. And that's why, and I said this on the show too, the 10-hour preview thing, again, what EA did through Origin, was the worst thing they could have done for Andromeda. That preview thing was the worst thing they could have done for that game. But they did it, and they should have delayed it.
Well, they have to do that because they sell that. That shouldn't be a thing that they sell to play a game a few hours early.
I is, you know, again, I disagree with that, and that's on EA, in my opinion. Dungeon Buster in chat says, it's not perfect either, but they weren't as in your face about Andromeda's. Heck, the original Mass Effect trilogy were incredibly polished compared to Andromeda for me. I think the original Mass Effect game had its issues too, but, you know, we're
the original ones weren't great until after there were the good high res mods.
Yeah. But the, well, I thought two and three.
Do you remember the problems they had with rendering Turian faces, especially the ones for Garrus's face?
Yeah.
In the first one? And that should never got really fixed. It took modders to fix it.
You want to know another game in a completely different genre from things that we're talking about that I think kind of failed to make a good first impression, at least for me, that apparently is being patched and is now a lot better than it was its first go around? It's a recent game, Super Bomberman R. That game came out on the Switch, right? And I think that game, it's apparently selling pretty well, but I would say it's only selling well because it's one of a very few launch titles that's retail on the Switch. That's the only reason that game is selling. I'm sorry. I don't buy into the whole, oh, Bomberman, people love this again and all this. No, that game was only selling because it was one of the few things available at retail. Because I did not think that game was particularly great the first time I played it. Again, I was never into Bomberman that much to begin with. I think it's kind of an overrated franchise, in my opinion, and there's just going to always be certain games we all kind of disagree on. But my understanding is I should give it a second shot because apparently they patched a lot. They changed a lot of stuff with that, and they've been doing this free DLC and all that stuff. So there's another example of a game that kind of had a first impression for some people.
They know how it plays. I mean, they have units to play the game on. How do they not know this plays poorly? And they're like, well, that's good enough. I mean, that's the decision that they made.
Maybe they did. Maybe they did know, unfortunately.
So. And then they come back, oh, look, oh, we hear you. We're going to make sure it's taken care of. What if we didn't hear from you? Oh, well, that's good enough for them. I mean, come on.
All right, in the interest of time, we're going to move on to our next story. But needless to say, I'm glad at least it doesn't sound like it's the last time we'll hear about Mass Effect, but it sounds like it's probably going to go to another team within BioWare. And it'll also be interesting to see what happens with this new game that they're working on, which we should at least kind of get to see some glimpses of at E3. We'll see. Moving on, though, for now. Loki.
All right. So Steam put out this big blog post, or I should say Valve put out this big blog post about Steam, mainly the Steam store, and talking about, you know, kind of, you know, how, where it's been and where they're going with it and how they're going to be making revisions. So one of the things they're talking about, you know, there's different users, of course, of the store, like people that are constantly viewing the store, people that just come there once a month, you know, different developers that have stuff in the store. And they're talking about a little bit how, you know, the experiment with Greenlight was kind of a step towards, you know, opening up Steam to a wider range of games and developers. And, you know, that didn't entirely work out the way that they wanted to. You know, they, you know, basically should have done some basic checks to make sure the game works, and now they know that they need to do that on each title. But of course, you know, not just, you know, filter between what, you know, their tastes are and stuff. And then with that, also, they're talking about how they're exposing now how these different recommendation algorithms work. So, for example, you know, if you're recommended a game now, what they're showing you is, and instead of just, oh, hey, why am I being recommended to play, you know, Hot to Foot Boyfriend or something like that, you can see, okay, well, it's because it's similar to these games you played, or, you know, the reviews are positive. It's follow, you know, these curators that you follow recommend it. Your friends like it, you know, that type of stuff. And so it kind of gives you more of an insight to why, you know, you're being recommended something, which is kind of useful, I think, instead of just blindly being recommended something.
We see you're attracted to Fowl. Play Hot to Foot Boyfriend.
Well, I'm glad they're addressing some of these things because I do have to admit the Steam store is really, like, hard to navigate for me. Like, and I actually, I don't know, I think the personalization sometimes is almost a bit much. I don't, like, it seems like every little thing in there is like, you would like this because you like this, and that's not always the case, you know what I mean? Like, I just kind of wish I could see the store that's just like, what are the new popular games, what are the spotlights on, and all this stuff. That's just why I want to see.
They kind of have it still, I mean, but yeah, it's just all over the place.
Yeah, it's kind of all over the place. And the Steam store is so bloated. That's the other big problem. Yeah. It's so bloated that it's kind of hard to navigate around. And to be fair, I mean, I kind of feel the same way about like the app stores on phones, be it Apple or Google. Like there's just, there's too fucking much. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's really hard to find the diamonds.
Just one of the things, you know, playing those clicker games and stuff, which require you to watch lots of ads for different bonuses and stuff. I get to see a lot of the different apps that are out there. And I got to say, man, all of them look the same. Like, they seriously, it's just like a fucking cookie cutter.
You know? Oh, sure. One thing catches on, like Clash of Clans or whatever.
I still don't understand how that fucking Pokemon game is. I did took a bunch of screenshots. I haven't posted them on Twitter or anything like
you
that.
You should.
But it's like a fucking, like, just in your face, just complete IP violation fest right there. I'm like, how the fucking hell can you get away with this shit?
Tag Nintendo in your screen caps. It'll be fun.
I've already reported it for, you know, violating, you know, IP. But it's just ridiculous. And that's the thing is, like, the advertisements show the Pokemon stuff, but when you actually go to the page for the game, it doesn't show any of the Pokemon stuff.
Cico de Milo in chat says, Rob, how do you know you didn't like the game Steam recommended if you haven't played it yet? I guess I could take a chance on some of them, but the realistic part is there's only so many hours in the day I have to game. Usually by the time I get to the store, I've already made the decision on what it is I'm going to buy. It's kind of like when you go to the grocery store, you know, oh, I'm going to buy some apples and I'm going to get some, you know, lunches for work and all this stuff. You know, you kind of already have, like, you know what you're going to buy. But granted, once in a while, you get tempted with other things. And that does happen to me on Steam, to be fair, is that sometimes I have, you know, bought things a little bit on a whim, but you know when it happens, Steam sale. And I think a lot of y'all fall for it during the Steam sale as well.
Well, then
it's like, oh, well, this game's $1.50 right now. Shit, why not? I'll buy it.
And that's the thing, too. Like, the Steam sales now, the way that they're doing them, where it's not different each day, it's kind of like you look at it and you're like, okay, I'm done. You know, it's just, whereas I think they had more engagement when it was you mixing it up each day.
Mm-hmm.
Granted, I mean, there's certain rules, you know, wait for the, you know, flash sales or whatever.
In a way, it's a bummer that the Steam streaming thing hasn't taken off more than it has. I mean, did you guys remember that you can actually stream video games within Steam? Like, it has its own, like, Twitch competitor embedded in it, right? You know, that would be kind of neat if you're in the store. You can actually see people that are kind of playing the game there in the store, so you can get a sense for, like, what the game is really like at a live moment somewhere within the game. But, you know, then again, at the same time, you know, not every stream is the same, and some are going to be, like, in very weird parts of the game.
Actually, is that stream to Twitch, or is that, like, you know?
No, it's Steam's own internal thing that they do.
Why would I use that, then?
People are. It is out there.
I don't know. I just would think that people would want to be on Twitch or something.
The reason why I think of that is because on the PlayStation Store and the Xbox Store, they do that. Is that you have the whole, like, the game is there, and then it's like you can click here and watch people that are playing it right now.
Yeah, but those people are streaming to Twitch.
They are.
So why would I use the service to stream to Steam to do advertising for them? That's like that. Pay me.
That's why a would I great do question. That? So, all right. Anyhow, moving on. Let's talk about E3, and let's talk about Nintendo a little bit. We brought them up there in that last story. They're detailing some of their E3 plans a little bit, what's going on. Of course, and this is no surprise, Super Mario Odyssey is going to be a big focus at E3. They are saying this is the first ever opportunity to play Super Mario Odyssey, so that will be something that's available at E3. Apparently, they are also doing a video instead of a press conference, and this is expected. But this is getting a lot of interesting feedback on the internet. Instead of a Nintendo Direct, they're calling it Nintendo Spotlight E3 2017. Some people taking issue with the name change, that it's not a Nintendo Direct, it's a Nintendo Spotlight. I don't really see what the big fucking deal is. I think it's going to be the same thing that you got before. I think the difference is, and the reason why they're calling it a Nintendo Spotlight, is because this time, you can go to E3 and play the games they're about to show. I think that's the difference. I think that's all this boils down to, is that they're making this video not just for everybody out there, but the people that are about to walk in the door and actually see these things in front of them at E3. That's my thought. I don't know. But anyway, I just thought that was really weird on Twitter. Like, a lot of people are like, oh, Nintendo is doing another thing and they need to be doing XYZ. I'm like, it's going to be... They have
so
a
are they doing their Best Buy tour again, or...
I don't think they need to. E3 is public now.
Yeah, I'm not going to pay to go down there.
I'm just saying. They're going to get that word of mouth anyway. So the Best Buy thing was always kind of a clusterfuck anyway. But anyway, they are going to be, of course, during the spotlight, announcing new details for Nintendo Switch games launching this year. And Treehouse Live will be back. There's going to be tournaments for ARMS because that game is out like right like days after E3.
Before E3.
Oh, is it right before E3?
I thought it was. Isn't it the early part of June?
I thought it was maybe like June 16th or like right after.
Oh, is it after? Maybe it's after.
I don't remember. Maybe somebody in chat knows, but I thought ARMS was like right after. But they are. Maybe it is right before. Maybe you're right. But
well,
anyway.
Here, let me take a look at the release days.
Thank you. If somebody in chat didn't beat you to it already.
oh, it is on the 16th, yeah.
The 16th. Okay, so it's Friday after E3. All right. So anyway, they also will be doing Treehouse Live, and they are saying that there will be some announcements during Treehouse Live. Usually those end up being like things like DLC and some other like cute little things. It's not like major, major announcements, although I don't know. I feel like there was a couple big ones that were dropped. I remember at the Treehouse last year, that was the first time we got to see Pokemon Go. Well, the beta had been going on at that point, but that was the first time that like they could openly really show Pokemon Go, which was kind of a big deal. Especially considering that that's not really a Nintendo game. I mean, yes, it's an IP, but they really didn't have a lot to do with Pokemon Go besides the intellectual stuff from one of their subsidiaries. Splatoon 2 will also be live streamed from the show floor. That's another big release that's coming in July, so that'll get a lot of focus as well. I guess some people are taking issue with the fact that does this mean there's not going to be anything else for the Switch this holiday? And I don't think that's true. We know Xenoblade is another big one that's coming. They haven't talked about how that's going to play into E3, but they have dated that for holiday. I think there's still definitely room for surprises, and I think this is the time to finally fucking tell us, like, when else are they going to talk about
Virtual Console?
Virtual Console, the online program that we're supposed to start paying for around the end of summer, and some of this stuff. I think some of these questions ought to be answered around the same time frame, but at the same time, Nintendo can kind of do a direct and has done a direct whenever the fuck they feel like it. So if it isn't announced at E3, that doesn't mean it won't come 3 weeks later. Does that make sense? Because I think even with E3, they will still find a way to do another direct in July just before Splatoon 2 to remind everybody that Splatoon 2 is coming and to get your pre-orders in. So Nintendo will do that stuff. I think it's just a little different what they're doing for E3, but it's not that different from what they did last year and the year before, except last year was solely Breath of the Wild, as we know. But that's also a great comparison, too, is that keep in mind, last E3, we didn't know about the Switch. All we had was Breath of the Wild, and we knew that there was a new Nintendo system coming, but Nintendo didn't really start announcing any of that shit till way after E3. So Nintendo's on Nintendo's timetable, I suppose. Let's see. Come on, hand on your heart. And chat says, I'm hoping for Smash Brothers, although it's Nintendo, so low expectations. I don't know. We talked about this last week with Mario Kart 8.
Yeah, all the remasters.
People are willing to rebuy the Wii U games, and there's a lot of people that straight up fucking miss the Wii U games. I think Smash could stand to do very, very well on Switch. It would really not surprise me at all if they ended up doing a Smash Brothers port for Switch. But I think if you're going to lower your expectations, you need to expect it's going to be the Wii U 3DS game with new stages,
a few new characters,
maybe some real surprise characters, though. We might get shit like Bomberman, you know, was obviously a big part of the Switch lineup. You know, you might get some real cool characters, but that would be about it. You know what I mean? Oh, we'll see. You're shaking your head.
It pisses me off. Like, I have a Wii U, and this is insulting. It's absolutely insulting. Oh, hey, we're going to release this new system. It's going to have the same fucking games
well,
you already own.
But at least that's not all they're doing. There's plenty of other stuff too, like Mario Odyssey. I'm sure it's going to be badass. So, you know, there's other stuff too. ARMS.
It's not out. Once again, I don't need to buy the system then because none of this shit is out. I'm not buying the system until this shit is out. Because you know what?
You wouldn't be able to buy
a system. I was fucking burned by the 3DS. I wanted my fucking Saints Row and DJ Hero, and I got neither of them. So fuck that shit.
You wouldn't be able to find a Switch even if you wanted one.
What are you talking about? I've seen them in stores all the time.
Are they?
Yeah.
I thought they were still kind of hard to find.
No, not at all. Several occasions I've seen them already.
All right, let's move on. More potential E3 stuff, right, Jamie?
Well, we remember Nana Onsha, right?
Mm-hmm.
And Ines gave us Guitar Man. Well, they're two big guys, Masaya Matsura and Keiji Yano, are going to be getting together to make a game that is currently titled Project Rap Rabbit. That is a new rhythm action adventure game. Matsura gave us Parappa, Vib Ribbon. Yano gave us Guitar Man, Osutatakai Oendon, and the U.S. Remake Elite Beat Agents. And so they're going to be working together. There's not much else about it except that it seems to have this sort of ancient Japan vibe with some technology, like a motorized unicycle and some drones and a flying saucer and a giant toad and a rabbit. That, I'm sorry, with the way his ears are tied up, I can't help but think of Usagi Yojimbo from the early TMNT stuff. So, but it looks, I like the art style. It looks really neat. And it just says it's coming, quote, very soon.
Hmm.
Soon.
Ooh, maybe one of those surprise bombshells that it's on the store now.
Mayhap.
At E3. I don't want to get my hopes up that far, but maybe a summer release.
Mayhap.
Yeah. So
we'll see.
I think something you're definitely going to see at Sony's press conference seems all but guaranteed at this point. Just a few more stories for you guys than the classic game of the week. Or excuse me, actually this week we got a system, right?
Yep.
Classic system of the month. Loki.
All right. So this is pretty exciting. Maybe something we'll hear a little bit more about during E3, but we've got a brand new game coming from Edmund McMillen, who is the creator of Super Meat Boy and The Binding of Isaac. So, not sure what it is yet, but they've he's teased that we're coming close to announcing it and its release date. So keep an eye out for it. I don't want to spoil the fun yet, but I can say this: it's hard, it's weird, it's personal, and it has amazing controls. It's a totally unannounced IP and easily one of the largest games I've ever made level wise.
Oh, interesting. But a lot of the other stuff, the way he describes it, does sound like the other two games. Not that that's a bad thing. Those are both very good games.
Yeah. So,
yeah, we'll see. I'm curious if it's gonna have a very similar art style, because
probably they were both
Meat Boy and Isaac are very, very similar in the way they look, even though they play completely differently,
Yeah.
So yeah.
Be cool. Very curious.
Yeah. I'm sure that'll be a E3 surprise somewhere. We'll see. Let's move on to... here's a character that could show up in a Smash Brothers. I think they've requested, they being the fans, that she show up in Smash Brothers at some point, and that's Shantae. Shantae, you stay. No, not that Shantae. This is Shantae, S-H-A-N-T-A-E. Shantae, the half-genie hero.
I remember the Kickstarters for this game.
Yeah, and it's coming to Switch, which is big surprise. Big surprise, not. But that's still awesome for Shantae. And again, people who missed it on the Wii U. So Way Forward did confirm that Shantae, the half-genie hero, is going to come to the Nintendo Switch over the summer. It will be a digital and a physical release. XSEED is going to be handling the physical release. The game will be compatible with the HD Rumble, and Way Forward has announced all this stuff on Twitter. So that may be something you see a little bit of a clip on at E3. And again, puts Shantae out there. So, again, if they did want to put her in Smash Brothers and answer some of that fan feedback, that would be a great way to kind of put her back out there in front. I don't know. I think when it comes to the more indie games and stuff, I think Shovel Knight is still one that a lot of people have their fingers and toes crossed for. But Shantae is certainly one of the big ones out of the Nintendo indies. We'll see. So, all right. But you know what? Let's take a trip down memory lane, shall we? Let's take a trip to the past with the classic game of the week segment. Every week,
thanks to the magic of radio.
Not that. There's no radio magic this week. How the hell was that MP3 still in there? That's embarrassing.
Like radio tragic.
That was a radio tragedy right there. All right. Let's get to the classic game of the week. And Dark Soccer is going to jump into the gaming vault and find a system, because plot twist in 2017, not only are there pre-recorded segments sometimes, but there's a system. Actually, that was last year. But there's a system of the month.
How is this a plot twist now that I've been doing it for 5 months?
That's true. I don't know. It's a continued twist. I don't know. Anyway, the classic game
spiral
of the
out of control.
Dark Sakura, what is the classic system of the month?
The Texas Instruments TI-99/4A. You remember this thing?
Yes, I do.
This was one of the first systems I ever played. In fact, I would even go on record saying that I played one of these before I played an Atari 2600. Or maybe roughly around the same time. But I have stronger memories of this because my friends had one. The TI-99/4A was a computer that was released in June of 1981. It came out for $525 at the time, which today would be about $1,300, you know, now. Welcome, and it was an enhanced version of the TI-99/4 that came out in 1979. Now, the one in 1979 came out for $1,150, which would be about $3,700 today. So it actually was re-released with better stuff at a lower price point. So this was the first computer that had a 16-bit processor in it. It basically was... It was like this weird kind of built-in cartridge slot in it and a like chiclet keyboard that was more of a calculator-style keyboard. It was pretty neat, but it also had, for the 99/4A, it also had an additional graphics mode. You could use lowercase characters instead of what were pretty much just small caps. And it had a travel keyboard. It was the most powerful thing that was out at the time. It used a ROM, it had the ROM cartridge, which they referred to as solid state software at the time. And you could put in the cartridges for different applications or games. You could do all kinds of stuff on it. Now, there was a power regulator board that was housed in front of the cartridge slot. And I remember this because it got so hot. People were calling it the coffee cup warmer. But I remember, you know, we would like have to put like some padding around that because it was so hot to the touch. It also, one of the other neat things about this too is that you could get peripherals for 5 1/4 floppy drive. You could get an RS-232 card that had two serial ports and a parallel port. So basically, it had like all kinds of extra add-ons. There was a thermal printer, an acoustic coupler, a tape drive that used...
I had a tape drive.
Yep. Used audio cassettes as media. Oh, don't get me started on the one in the Coleco add-on. I still cry over how many erased tapes I had that
yep,
day.
Yep, I erased mine too. Like, because I got this programming book for the TI Basic, and it came with a tape, and I didn't understand it. My family didn't understand how that worked. And so we recorded over it.
Well, the other thing about it, too, is that you could get it on its own, or you could get it with a monitor that was basically a modified 13-inch Zenith TV. It was, and it actually couldn't get its RF modulator approved by the FCC. But it eventually did. It eventually did ship with a modulator. It also was great for speech synthesis. It had a plug-in speech synthesizer module. Just all kinds of just neat stuff that it could do. I mean, and seriously, if you look at it with all of its peripherals side to side hooked up to each other, oh my goodness, it was pretty crazy, and it took up a lot of dust.
Like,
space.
Is that Wolfenstein in TI-99?
I think this is like one of those, like, what we're looking at in studio here. This is one of those, like, demo scene things. Yeah. So this isn't, like, an actual game. But
I just want something that had music.
Yeah, it shows that, like, oh, this is what the system is capable of rendering
type
of thing.
Pretty awesome. Yeah, exactly. My game looked like that.
The way that you hooked up the peripherals to it were by a daisy chain fashion. It would basically have like a sidecar expansion units that would just go on and on and on. But it took up a lot of room. It took up a lot of room. And not to go into too much else, you know, with this system is that you also had a joystick port for it. It used you could use a wired remote controller, which is what the joysticks were called. And you could also use Atari 2600 joysticks with a converter. I remembered that in particular. It had composite video and audio out. It worked for NTFC. The PAL-based ones had to go through like some UHF channel, if I remember right. But anyway, going back to the 80s. But yeah, this was the first 16-bit home machine that could play video games. So technically, this is our first 16-bit video game console. As far as the hardware support, it was all plug and play. You know, pretty novel for its time, given, you know, what systems were like then. It had something called a hex bus that could be considered almost a prototype for today's USB. The theory worked the same way that these were all powered ports for data transfer. Some of the other things that you could get were a four-color printer, a 300 baud modem, all kinds of, well, at the time, though, pretty crazy.
No, yeah, we had a 300 baud modem for our Commodore 64, and it was the shit.
Yeah, now it's just shit.
Well, yeah.
Oh, but yeah. But you could also get these different cartridges that were the ROM cartridges, and this is where a lot of the game came through. You get a memory plug in that gave you 4 KB of RAM. You could also get a super cart that would go to 32K, which pretty good for what it was. It also included the assembler G-ROM, and then you had like various games that would come out with it. Now, for the games that came out, there was Space Invaders. You had Parsec, Munchman, Alpiner, Tombstone City, 21st Century, Hunt the Wumpus, and Car Wars. A lot of the games were developed by John Phillips. And you could put them in cheat mode by holding shift and then pressing 838. You know, a lot of that was in there. There were, like, their own versions of, like, some of the more popular games. It was open architecture and super easy to develop for, but it didn't make that huge of an impact. Some of the other major games, I know that Tunnels of Doom was a big one on there. It was kind of like a D&D-style game. It was pretty neat. Now, today, though, because of the processor the capability that it has with that 16-bit processor, there are modern developments going on. Like, people have done a build of Super Mario Brothers that will run on it. It takes a while for that thing to load it, but it's all on that cartridge. And basically, what really drove this machine basically into failure was the advent of the Apple II and the Commodore systems. When this machine first came out in 1979, the Apple II pretty much, you know, kicked it to the dirt, because at the time, its price point for the Apple II was about $200 less than what this machine costs. And then by the time it came out in the 80s, we had Commodore running things pretty much. That basically, the head of Commodore was almost immediately responsible for the demise of the system because of the output of the Commodore VIC-20. So, but there you go. This silver and black, definite, machine of its time, you know, there actually is another big thing that killed it. Lack of third-party support. Nintendo.
Right, of
Pay
course.
Attention.
Yeah.
Lack of third-party development can definitely kill something, no matter how great it is. It was a great system, and it still has a major cult following.
Sure, of course.
You know, it was succeeded by the TI-99/2, the TI-99/8. There was the Geneve 9640 that was a clone of the system that was built as a card to fit into the TI peripheral expansion system. there was the second generation CPU. There was the Tommy Tutor. You know, basically things like that. But this right here, our first 16-bit system.
Nice.
So there you go.
There it is.
TI-99/4A.
Your classic system of the month, the TI-99/4A. Not to be confused with the graphing calculators the Texas Instruments became known for later on.
I used to play Pole Position on those.
Yeah, yeah. No, I remember those graphing calculators were pretty sweet. But that is interesting how that kind of became, like, you know, in the 80s when this faded, that's kind of what in the 90s Texas Instruments really became known for, were those fucking souped up calculators.
Right.
Yeah. So
yeah, no, those were the shit. There's still, I mean, and we used to see, God, what was it? Tandy gave us Radio Shack.
Yeah.
Tandy had their own kind of version of the same thing. Mm-hmm. But I don't remember it taking off very well at all. But this, I mean, when I was a kid, this was fantastic. I was like, ooh. So.
And Bobby Blackwolf points out that Texas Instruments still does the souped up calculators, even though we have smartphones now.
True. So, that.
Yeah, I've seen their name. Now it's all color graphing calculators. It's super fancy now.
But I will tell you
now.
This. When I was taking my algebra classes, mm-hmm. I hate algebra. But anyway, when I was taking my classes, the teachers still insist on having a graphics calculator and not using your phone for it, even though the phone will do all the same functionality. Because you do have a graphing calculator built in on the standard app, a scientific calculator, sorry.
Yeah.
Built in with the standard calculator app if you turn your phone sideways.
Right.
But they don't want to have any risk of cheating. So,
Right, like the graphing calculators weren't able to cheat with those.
We had these kind of longer scientific calculators that we were using in chemistry. It was more like a data storage, but we were allowed to have that in chemistry, but we would just store all of our formulas on them. Hmm. So
interesting. All right. Well, yes. We'll have to talk about the calculators another time, but for now, that is the classic system of the month.
To register participation for this week's episode of Orange Lounge Radio at VogNetwork.com, use the passphrase Target.
We got plenty more Orange Lounge Radio to come. We're going to take a quick break. We will be back to do some rapid fire news, what's in stores this week, and of course your calls at Orange Lounge Radio on Skype when we come back after this with more of Orange Lounge Radio. Welcome back, everybody, to Orange Lounge Radio. Live tonight with episode number 686 of our show, already in progress for this, May the 14th of 2017. I know those that are on the podcast feed don't get to hear our live music breaks because, you know, we can't just go around distributing other people's music as part of our show. But we did do a live tribute tonight to Robert Miles, who passed away this week, obviously a legendary trance music producer. I'm sure everybody knew that song, Children, back when that song first came out. That song was all over my college years. I don't know about you, Dark Sakura. That song was everywhere. And then, of course, the one we played during the break was my one I'm partial to, a song called Fable, which I think many people knew that song from the fact that it was in the trailer to the movie Ever After. Did you ever see that movie, Dark Sakura? The one with Drew Barrymore and Angelica Houston? And
no, I didn't.
No, you didn't? Oh, my gosh. No. It was a pretty good movie. It's worth your time. Just because Angelica Houston is awesome. I mean, is there anything that she's bad in? I don't think there is. Anyway. All right, enough about movies. Let's get back into video games. Let's get to some rapid fire news. Again, you guys can, of course, join us over at live.vognetwork.com if you have anything to say as the show is going on. So, Loki, why don't you start us off with some rapid-fire news?
Well, as you may remember, we talked a couple weeks ago about how there was some hidden teases inside Bayonetta's PC release, alluding to possibly Vanquish being the next game to be released. And, well, yes, it is. So, Vanquish has finally been announced, coming to PC on May 25th. And also with that, of course, they're going to have 4K resolution support, tons of graphic options, full keyboard and mouse support, and unlocked frame rates, which I believe is all good news for people. A lot of people are very excited by that, and definitely worth checking it out when it comes out in about a week. And then finally, Bob Ross. That's not a character or a person you would normally associate with different games like Smite or, you know, Dota or something like that. But hey, Smite is getting a skin based off Bob Ross for Sylvanas. And I guess there's going to be a loading frame and jump step jump stamp based off of Ross's face. It'll be coming out, or actually that is already out for PC players. It's coming out on May 16th for console players, and you can purchase it for $9.99 or 700 in-game gems.
I'm loving this resurgence of Bob Ross. It's kind of like, I guess a meme in these past couple of years. I mean, obviously the Twitch thing was huge in that department, but just, you know, Bob Ross was just a freaking genuine person. So, I mean, the putting him in the game Smite seems a little much, but I'm a, you know, Bob Ross was awesome, and more people need to know about his show. So
yeah,
yeah. So very cool. All right, moving on to some other gaming news. Another E3 kind of preview, if you will, about the new Need for Speed game. They did share a few details on their official website, that would be Ghost Games, about what to expect in the next Need for Speed franchise. It will be out by the end of 2017. I'm sure that's no surprise there. That's something they're looking at doing probably for the holiday. They do say that customization will be as strong a role as ever. Of course, cop chases and street races. What else do you expect in a Need for Speed game? Plenty of space in which to do the things you want. I want to say they said something about, oh yes, you can do the single player experience completely offline, so now you can actually pause the game as well. Won't that be nice? So yeah, apparently the last Need for Speed game had some issues there, but you can play the single player experience completely offline if you want, and then you can pause since you're offline. So that's pretty awesome. So there'll be more details on the game, of course, leading up to EA Play in June. That is an offsite event from E3. That is, of course, where we're expected to see more on FIFA 18, Star Wars Battlefront 2, and so on. We'll get more information on all that Saturday, June 10th at noon, when the EA Play 2017 live stream is happening. That's all during the EA kickoff weekend. On another note, Twitch has marked a day on their calendar to support more diversity and inclusivity on the platform. Inclusiveness. Why can I say that, but I can't say inclusivity? Anyway, May 26th. What?
Inclusivity.
Yeah, see, it ain't easy. All right.
Inclusivity.
Inclusiveness. All right. Anyway, on May 26th is the day. That's a Friday. And so Twitch is going to be celebrating what's called hashtag Twitch Unity. And they're going to be highlighting channels on the page that exemplify a positive culture that day, encouraging streamers to generate relevant discussions. There's also going to be an emoji for the event. And I think they are doing a T-shirt as well, where the proceeds all go to Amnesty International and their fight for human rights around the globe. So yeah, that's pretty cool. You know, Twitch has had its problems in the past, and you know, when you look around at the streamers, you see a lot of white dudes. Although I'm seeing more women get involved, which is great. But
there's no barrier to entry for that stuff.
It is getting more and more accessible. So that's, you know, I think we just need to encourage more people to get in there and actually stream and have more voices heard. And I've always been about that for podcasting, for sure, is that, you know, I don't see other podcasts as competition. I see that as a great thing, is that more voices are out there, more people are being heard. I would encourage everybody to podcast if you wanted to. Anyway, so I guess Twitch is trying to improve some things because they did have a diversified Twitch panel, and the chat room turned into a toilet bowl, as you can probably expect happens on internet chat rooms sometimes. So Twitch is, you know, as a company, trying to do things to really distance themselves from that. And I'm sure, you know, there's a lot of learning to go all around. But hopefully many folks will see this as an opportunity to participate, and you know, this is maybe a day to catch Twitch's ear on a lot of that stuff. So I don't know yet if I will be participating or not. Here's the thing. The 26th is the Friday of Memorial Day weekend, so it's also kind of a weird weekend to do, but I'm going to try and participate there on the Twitch Unity campaign that's on May 26th. So anyway, Dark Sakura, what do you have for us?
I have some stuff. Basically, how about a big sale for our Xbox folks? There's going to be a backwards compatibility sale that will put more than 275 games on discount, some of them up to 75% off. This starts on May 16th, which will be Tuesday here in the U.S. In other news, Taiko no Tatsujin is going to be on the Nintendo Switch by March of next year. Yeah, we got some time on that one. But look forward to it. then maybe you'll get to play it at E3.
Sounds like something that's trying to get in by the end of a fiscal year for somebody over there. So, but.
Right.
But the nice thing is, with this Switch being region-free, no longer will we have to worry about, oh, Japan has like 20 different Taiko games and we get... like,
import none. That sucker.
Yeah, exactly. You can do that now. So, very cool. All right. Let's talk about what's in stores this week. Things you can get your hands on a little sooner than a new Taiko no Tatsujin game.
Yep.
Starting in the U.S., Loki.
We have some interesting stuff this week. So, for PlayStation VR, they're going to be getting Farpoint, which is a new, like, first-person shooter game. It actually does, they sell a retail version with, I don't know if you remember, like, when they were doing that whole push for, like, the PlayStation Move and, like, 3D and stuff. They kind of sold this, like, gun peripheral thing for the Move.
Yeah.
And, like, their little navigation controller. Well, since now the nav controller isn't really something that they sell a lot of, and that harness thing for those is not something they sell anymore, I think they're actually making a new one that's kind of all incorporated in the one piece for this game. So that's going to be kind of neat and see if they're going to use that for further shooters. But that's going to be out this week. Also, Operation Babel, the new Tokyo Legacy on PC and on the Vita. The Surge on PC, PlayStation 4, and Xbox One. Bokuda Heartfelt Reunion on PC. Thumper on Nintendo Switch. Fire Emblem Echoes Shadow of Valentia on 3DS. Skylar and Plux Adventure on Clover Island on PC, PlayStation 4, and Xbox One. And that's it.
All right. Let's travel to Japan and check out some of the releases there. We're finally, now Golden Week is behind us, so we're getting back into some regular video game releases in Japan, including on the PlayStation 4 this week. The Japanese version of Prey will hit stores on May 18th. That's a game that I've been meaning to check out here, but it's one of those like, oh, I don't know if I want to jump in on the game because they really changed it from what it was, and I really enjoyed it on the Xbox 360. But I'm hearing this time it's more like, a lot of people are saying it's BioShock in space. That doesn't necessarily sound bad.
System Shock?
Yeah, maybe. But anyway, so I'm curious about this game. I want to learn a little more about it and what they really did to it. But in Japan, you'll get your chance to finally get your hands on it. We've had it a week or two, but you'll finally get your chance in Japan this week on the 18th. Also, Dark Sakura might be importing this. No, she probably won't. But it's Danganronpa 1 and 2 Reload is in Japan this week on the PlayStation 4.
Which are the versions we already have.
Yeah, so... it's something that's available. Yeah, that explains the low price in Japan. Also, Titanfall 2 moves into the best hits category in Japan this week, so you can check that out if you want. Moving over to the Vita, yes, we still get releases on the Vita in Japan, including Rewrite Harvest Festa comes out this week in Japan. That's kind of the lone release this week. I don't believe we have anything on the Switch this week. No, Switch is still empty until we get to Ultra Street Fighter 2 a little later this month, which is the same story for us here in the U.S., and on the 3DS, also a little slow right now in Japan. So really, it's just about the Vita and the PS4 right now. Let's go to the UK, Dark Sakura.
A few things. On the 16th, we have Farpoint. And then that's for PS4. Then on PS4, Xbox One, and PC, we have The Surge. And on the 17th, we have Bokuda Heartfelt Reunion for PC.
All right. By the way, going to the chat, following up something you were saying there, Loki, over at live.vognetwork.com, Dungeon Buster says, Loki was close. There was a leak a while ago that proposed a Spiritual System Shock sequel that eventually became Prey.
Well, they're actually doing a remaster for System Shock. If you remember, they had that whole I think it was Kickstarter that did that. So that's coming still. But yeah, it'd be nice to... I mean... hell, we don't know what the BioShock Infinite team, you know, what those guys are doing anymore. So I'm curious to see what their next game is.
All right. Before we get back into some gaming news, we need to visit our mailbag. Every week, you guys email us. Participate at orangeloungeradio.com is the place to send your emails. Dark Sakura will dive into the mailbag head first and pull out some emails that she says, this is worth our time to read. And sometimes she'll read the ones that aren't worth our time, too.
Maybe.
All tea, all shade. All right. So, Dark Sakura, what do you have for us in the mailbag tonight?
Two emails. The first one, good evening yet again. As of Monday, I have finally completed my first playthrough of Night in the Woods. I'm probably do another run focusing on Greg. Extra G's. My bad habit with this one is playing for several hours at a time, stopping for several days, as much as a week, then putting in several more hours. Not the best way to handle a story-based game. Also, just got the second volume of the soundtrack. As much music goes into this thing, the game itself makes pretty good use of silence. Speaking of silence, my Bluetooth headphones, an old pair of JBL Synchros, broke at the earpiece. I tried the BT55s, but found the controls hard to handle, and the BT signal kept cutting out. What headphones, wireless or otherwise, does or do each of you use? And yes, it would be do each of you use. And can you recommend a good Bluetooth headset under $200? This is Robert M. All my last ones were free. I had some Plantronics ones that were good. I've used Turtle Beach. I even used my husband's Beats. They're all right. I don't like the way that Beats does game sound.
I use a Razer Chroma question mark, although that might be the mouse. I can't remember what they're all called, but it's a Razer, and the lights on the head can change. And so the games can, like, when I play Diablo 3, everything goes red because that's a cute little thing they do with Diablo 3. But that's a USB. It's not Bluetooth. I still use USB because what's interesting, so I think I actually mentioned this a week or two ago, is that I'm not exactly some brand loyalist, but it just so happens that all this stuff I have a Razer mouse, a Razer keyboard, a Razer headset. So the mechanical keyboard I have is Razer, and it has a USB port on it. So I plug my USB headset into that port, and it works really well. And maybe because it is all the same ecosystem, it kind of plays off each other. So I don't really have a need for a Bluetooth headset in that regard. The one thing I could say is that it does cause this really awkward wire to be showing on me when I'm streaming games. Like you probably notice I have a big old wire dangling from me because that's my headset. But I don't have enough experience with Bluetooth to really recommend you anything. I'd have to look to chat. My car does Bluetooth, but that's not under $200. Loki, what about you? Do you have any experience with headsets, Bluetooth or otherwise? What do you use?
The only Bluetooth headset I've ever had was just the Sony stereo ones for the PlayStation 3, and those have broken, unfortunately. So I don't really technically have a Bluetooth headset right now. I just use a pair of headphones I got from Sony's actual online store, because a long time ago at my old job, I got, like, they gave us as a promotion like $2,000 worth of money towards the Sony store. And so I bought, you know, headsets for our game room at the time. So I own four pairs of them. They're not really headsets. They're more headphones. They're just like normal headphones. And I've worn them so long that, like, all of the rubber that's on the actual headphone pad has worn off. And now it's just like this, like, felt. And I'm just like, ah, fuck it. I'm not going to, you know, switch this out. Because it works fine for what I use it. So I use that with, like, you know, the PlayStation 4, because you can plug in the headphones into the controller, which I love that. All consoles should have that because it's fantastic. But yeah, I don't have a Bluetooth headset right now.
So I guess I totally lied, because ActDev reminded me. I do have a Bluetooth headset. ActDev says, I love the Sony PlayStation 3 or 4 wireless headset. Duh, I do have a PlayStation 4 wireless headset. I wasn't thinking I don't know why I didn't think of Bluetooth at first. Probably because I'm using it on my PlayStation, not my PC. And I just, for some reason, I wasn't associating Bluetooth. I do use that PlayStation 4 headset. It's great for the audio in the game. It's not great for your voice. I sound very tin can when I do the live streams, because I was doing a Diablo live stream on my wireless headset, and actually people were complaining about how awful I sounded. So, yeah, that is a concern. But, I mean, it'll get you through your shooter games and the things you have to do with that. But and the sound output is fine. I mean, if I want to really immerse myself in a game, like I think I used the headsets a lot when doing Edith Finch and some of those games. You know, that was it was really good. So plus for some games, although it's really, really limited, you can actually download audio balancing specs that the developers did, because I know they have things like that for, you know, like your Call of Duty games. And what's the horror movie thing that was a huge sleeper hit?
Until Dawn.
Thank you, Until Dawn. There's one of those on there and all that stuff. So, yeah, that's the headset. So, all right, some ideas for you, hopefully, Robert M. Let's move on. Dar Sakura.
The last email is long. Okay. Hello, Alar. Rob mentioned the scandalous In the Groove 3 cabinet he found before last week's show. In actuality, this is an ordinary In the Groove 2 cabinet. The fact of the matter is that hackers gonna hack. Beginning around 2006 or so, folks started to get bored of the songs that came on the machine. Some digging on the hard drive revealed it was simply running a slightly modified Linux version of Stepmania 3.95. Some experimentation revealed that just as you can add songs, themes, notes, skins, etc. to Stepmania on your computer, such things could also be added to an In the Groove 2 cabinet. Heck, I have actually done this myself. Machine owners and savvy players who have sought permission from their arcade's owners have modified the software and In the Groove 2 cabinets all over the world. Some of the more popular themes include the Simply Love theme, U-Salt, which is a high-visibility theme packing many tournament-friendly features, and actually... And actually, In the Groove 3 theme, which was leaked onto the internet in a partially finished state, along with the incomplete songs and step charts. Fans finished off all the stuff on their own and even designed the marquee that Rob saw atop the machine. Modifying your own cabinet involves jumping through some hoops and dealing with the installed Linux OS, or you can just wipe it out, replace it with a more modern OS and something called OpenITG, which is a newer open source version of In the Groove. It supports a wider range of hardware and is quite flexible. Highly recommended if you own a machine. Another note about the machines, about the cabinets themselves. Yes, some say Andamiro on them. That's because Andamiro actually manufactured the first batch of In the Groove 2 cabinets. Cabinets that don't say Andamiro were manufactured later and are of slightly lower quality. And that's everything in a nutshell about modifying In the Groove 2 cabinets. Time to go buy one, except for the fact that they're actually quite hard to find, quite expensive, considered to the cheap, freely available in older DDR machines. In fact, the Enemiro can cost $5,000 or more, even today. Oh well. Maybe next life, Aaron YYR.
I knew the minute we were having that discussion last week about that, what the hell is this In the Groove 3 machine I'm looking at? I knew YYR would email the show and explain it all. And there it is. I'm just blown away that the marquee was a fan thing. Like, that's the thing that threw me. Like, the cabinet being modded and all that stuff, I was like, all right, I get that. That's cool. But, like, the fact that it actually has, like, a fan marquee and it's not, like, an official thing, that's the part that, like, threw me for a loop.
Why?
But I was... Well, I wasn't expecting to see it in an arcade. Like, somebody's house, yes. This was in an actual arcade somewhere. That's why it threw me.
Which they can get in some serious trouble.
Which is why I'm saying, just if there's anybody out
there...
leave
it alone.
You know, just let it go. It's not hurting nobody.
But there are a lot of arcades. I mean, shoot, even CoinOp down here is mostly privately owned machines.
Yeah, maybe that's what's happening at the place I was at.
So a lot of times, especially if a person is leasing out their cabinets, you know, they could have their own custom artwork on it. When we were working on our MAME, I was making a marquee for it, and I've seen custom art on cabinets and arcades before, so it's not entirely unheard of.
The other thing that really got me, I don't remember if it was in this email or something someone sent to me on Twitter or something, but somebody sent me like a different In the Groove 3 marquee that looked really professionally done, but it was different from even the one I saw. And I was like, okay, that's a trip.
There's one that I saw where a guy built a cabinet completely from scratch, just like pads, everything, and that sucker looked legit. So, yeah. I mean, that's on YouTube, if you search for like a custom ITG3 cabinet or something like that.
I got to say, though, I wonder if that's the case of the In the Groove 3 machine, then I wonder if that's why they had some DDR thing. It was DDR, 2014 or 2015, one of those mixes, in a Supernova cabinet, which I'd never seen that before. I always thought that was in its own cabinet. I wonder if somebody didn't just upgrade.
No, I think you can do the upgrade kits
can
for
you?
Those.
All right, yeah. I didn't know that. I didn't know that. Anyway.
Yeah, and just know if you're buying the cabinet new, it's got all the fancy light bars and stuff. But I think you can still upgrade those.
Well, our pal JD, who's been on the show before, I believe is coming up. I think it's this next weekend. And I said I'm going back. So we're going to go back and check it out and play some more. So I'll let you know what happened. I know JD is not afraid to play all those like dance games. He's got more stamina than I do. So we'll get the lowdown on what's going on here locally on the next episode of OLR on the continuing saga. Is that it for emails tonight, Dark Saga?
That's it.
All right. Thank you, YYR, for that email. Even if it was long, it definitely... Pretty well, that answers all the questions I had, so there you go. I do want to quickly address Twitter. You know, I've been very bad about acknowledging Twitter on the show as of late, but I do want to mention some tweets that we got this week. There was a tweet from @MorningWolf with an E on Twitter who said, regarding last week's show, Fun Spot is completely worth a visit, but it is not a day trip. We have great picks from 2001. Need to go back. Yeah, when I'm on the East Coast this time, as much as I'd love to go to Fun Spot, it's a little far off the beaten path, at least for where I'm going out there, for me to really justify going. But someday I would really like to see that. So there you go. And then we have, that's it, because that other one was from last week. So there you go. S200 Matt says, 3-hour drive from Connecticut, Rob. We can do it. All right, maybe. We'll see. I still have to plan that trip. I'm still waiting for the official wedding invitation. So I have to save the date, but not the wedding invite. So still a little ways to go, though. That's still, almost 6 months out. So, all right. Let's move into some more news, and then we'll get to your calls at Orange Lounge Radio on Skype. But first, Loki.
All right. So Google has acquired Alchemy Labs. And they did, of course, a wonderful VR game that I like playing called Job Simulator. So, of course, they both announced it. Both Alchemy and Google had posted their own announcements, which is interesting because you may remember they also did the Rick and Morty virtual reality, too. So I'm wondering, with all this stuff, maybe Google's going to start launching their own VR. I mean, they have their whole dream stuff, but I wonder if they're going to try to get into PC VR as well.
The revenge of Google Glass.
It was Google Glass just before its time. That's all. Hey, you know what? Eventually, I'm just waiting for, because VR is kind of taking off. I mean, it's still pretty early, but I'm waiting for when we get into the whole AR taking off as much as VR is right now. So that's what I'm waiting for, which we're not going to wait much longer. Give it a few more years.
All right. Let's move on and talk about Quake Champions. I want to check this game out, actually, and I actually could, because apparently this large-scale tech test actually started on Friday, May 12th. Oops, I've missed it. But the good news is it's still going until Sunday, May 21st. There is no NDA with this beta, so go ahead and share the footage or opinion online all you want. So the beta is not just live during the weekend. It is going to be available through the entire duration of the test. There will be a new 4v4 mode called Sacrifice that's available during the test. And if you want to get in on this, you just go to quake.bethesda.net. That's the official Quake site. Put in your details and you will get a key that Bethesda says will come immediately. It's going to be an 8GB download. You do have to have the Bethesda launcher to play it, because that's what we fucking need, as another game company with their own launcher software. Because we've got what? We've got Origin. We've got Uplay. We've got... anyway, the list goes on and on. Every company wants their own launcher, but fine. I guess there ain't anything in this world that's truly free. So if you want to do Quake Champions, you got to get the Bethesda launcher. There you go. Anybody else planning on checking it out? Just me. If it's as fast-paced as the old-school Quake games were, I think I'd be really into it. So, I mean, I like Overwatch, but Overwatch isn't slow by any means, but I could just imagine, it would basically be 200cc mode on Overwatch. I'm all for that, so... All right, let's move on. Dark Sakura.
Oh, yeah. How about Super Nintendo games? There's going to be a Super Nintendo game coming out, Rob. A Super Famicom game, to be honest. Actually, it is related to a Satellaview game that came out, and they're going to be doing this as an anniversary celebration. Basically, the game is called Kaizo Chojin Shibi... I'm going to... butcher this. Shibibinman Zero. It came out in 1997, and this cartridge is being released to commemorate the game's 20th anniversary, and it will be for 6,998 yen, which is roughly $62, and it goes on sale in June. And I remember a little bit of this game. I think I played a ROM of it, but it's just a little platformer adventure game. It's cute and fun, and if you want to go out and buy a brand new Super Nintendo game, import it. I don't know how I feel about this.
I think it's great when people make these new games for old consoles. I mean, I don't think that's going to be particularly profitable, but that's not what this is about.
Well, it's more of a collector thing anyway.
Exactly.
So it's novel. I don't know. I kind of want it.
Will the cartridge be yellow to match my Super Nintendo?
No.
Because it should be. Actually, those cartridges, in all seriousness, those cartridges don't have the same chemical in them, so they don't change color like your Super Nintendo's do.
This is also a Super Famicom cartridge, so it uses that lighter gray material.
Right, right.
And different texture.
And you have to have the little adapter thingy, ba-bop. You don't. Or pull the tabs out, or whatever
it is. Pull the tabs out.
Yeah, pull the tabs out.
I used to play mine on a Game Genie.
Dark Tetsuya says the same series as Shockman on TurboGrafx-16, I do believe. So, cool. All right, just a few more stories for you guys, and then your calls at Orange Lounge Radio on Skype. Loki.
Completely unaware that this was even going to be a thing, but apparently it is. China is, they have a Chinese company that's making a live-action Contra movie. That's right. It's going to be, I guess, you know, based off the original game. They, you know, read the synopsis. In 1988, a huge meteorite lands on an uninhabited island in the South China Sea. Chen Quang and Li Xiong investigate but come up empty-handed. 29 years later, Chen sends commandos Bill and Lance into a combat mission to neutralize the villainous Red Falcon organization, but end up facing a different enemy altogether. Yes, I'm down. I mean, it doesn't really have anything, the little teaser, other than their logo. I'm still down with that.
Why not? Why
it's
not?
It's fucking awesome.
You know what? China ate up our Warcraft movie. Why not let the Chinese cinema community take a take on something?
Contra's like really cheesy anyways. There's no way you can make it bad. I mean, there's like, it really just go with everything.
Go for broke.
If you're
going to make it bad, just make it really bad.
I'm totally down to see this whenever it comes out.
Dark Tetsuya in chat says, I'm excited for this. It's going to be amazingly ridiculous, and I'm okay with it. Stoppy says, I think Contra movie was its own film genre back in the 80s. SS200 Matt says, I'm looking forward to the riff tracks of this. Well, apparently this Mystery Science Theater revival, a lot of people are really loving. I haven't watched it yet. But
I tried to watch part of it, but the problem is I don't have enough time to sit down and actually watch it without the kids going, it's my turn!
Oh, God.
I'm like, you just had your turn last, like, 2 years, so no.
Yeah, shut up and watch what I'm watching.
Exactly. Right?
Those shows aren't dirty. Mystery Science Theater was never dirty. So no. Maybe they have the dual-level humor, but it's not going to hurt kids, so... That's cool. Did you ever get into Mystery Science Theater, Dark Sakura?
Yeah, I have the movie on Laserdisc.
Okay, I thought this was the...
Remember,
you haven't watched...
Eastman.
Okay,
he came from the East to do battle with the amazing Rondo.
You haven't seen the new ones,
Rondo.
Though?
No.
Oh, that just kind of surprises me. I would have thought you'd been all over that.
But the movie was great.
The movie was
and
great.
And the one that was so boring that I couldn't watch it all in one sitting was Manos, The Hands of Fate.
Oh, God. I've fallen asleep through that several times.
It was the one that they apologized for making them watch because it was that bad. And the one about waffles. I remember my friend Gwen, who was playing Final Fantasy XIV with us, remember?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
She came to visit. And we were watching the episode where they were singing the waffle song. So we left in the middle of the night to go to Walmart to buy waffles. True story, because that's all there is to do in Alabama.
I hope they actually tasted like waffles, unlike those waffle Oreos. All right. Anyhow, lastly tonight, you know what they say, y'all. Hacker's gonna hack. This is more of a modder's gonna mod type of situation,
okay,
though, going on here.
Cool.
And what is going on? They have actually put Sonic... into Mario Kart. That's right. Sonic has made his debut in Mario Kart 8. That's all through a mod. Yes, that's how they've done it. They've modded Sonic into Mario Kart 8. There's actually a video out there where you can watch it. I'd play it for you, but it's just all Mario Kart noises, really. It's just one of the things you have to see to believe. So I'm sure they just probably took one of the other characters and like modified the skin, but it looks really good. And it does make me go, you know, not Loki's going to love this, but you know, if they wanted to do more DLC for Mario Kart 8 now on the Switch, a Sonic-based thing would actually be kind of rad. Now, yes, I do know Sega has their own Sonic Racing, All-Stars, Transformers, all that stuff. I know they have that. And it's actually, it's a fun series. It's a good series. But we also haven't seen a game in that series in a while. You know, it was a Wii U launch title, and I think that's the last time we've seen it. So.
Yeah.
maybe if Sega would let them do, like, can you imagine, like, a Sonic course and, like, some of the Sega characters? Like, you could have, like, oh, God, who would show up? Probably Sonic, of course.
Sonic, Tails, Knuckles.
Sonic, Tails, Knuckles. Maybe they'd stretch and do, like, Ooh La La or something.
Maybe they can't do it anymore because if they put Sonic in the game, he has to have all his friends, and they really don't have space for, like, 60 more slots of characters.
Ooh, good point. Act Deft in chat says, there is the Amiibo costume. That's right. You can unlock a Sonic costume with the Amiibo. I forgot about that, and I should have remembered, because you can do a Mega Man costume, too. So that would be kind of fun for DLC if Nintendo wanted to go there. I mean, again, would just blow your childhood mind. The new Sega DLC coming to Nintendo. So weird, but I love it. Is there something else you want to jump in there with, Loki?
I mean, it's just, I don't know. Yeah, I mean, I guess they could do that. I don't think they're going to do that because it's minimal effort.
I don't know. Never say that. I think if they're going to do it, you're going to hear about it at E3. And if you don't hear about it at E3, then they're probably moving on to cranking out other Wii U games, much to Loki's excitement. So, all right. Well, that is it for our scheduled news tonight. But we're going to go ahead and open up the Skype line right now over at Orange Lounge Radio, all one word on Skype. If you want to give us a call and talk about, anything we've been talking about tonight or maybe something different, let's get to it. We got a call coming in. We'll take it right now. Hi, you're on Orange Lounge Radio. Who's this?
Hi, this is Raginator.
Hey, buddy. What's on your mind tonight, Raginator?
Excuse me. There's been news this week about Alan Wake being delisted everywhere, you know, because of music licensing issues. I thought I would pose a rather timely question. Now, all of us have been gamers for a while now, and that being said, we probably played a ton of games right. Over the years. Has there been any games out there that have soundtracks that we particularly loved? You know, either we listened to music directly through the game, or the music, the game came with the soundtrack that we listened to.
I got you. So, like, another game that relies on licensed music that we really love that we don't want to see suffer the same fate, maybe?
Yeah, well, not necessarily licensed music, you know, like Madden's or whatever. But let's say, for example, I've always loved two soundtracks. The soundtrack to Killer Instinct for the Super Nintendo. I played the soundtrack. Track to the F like crazy.
Killer cuts.
Yeah. And although I never played the actual game itself, one soundtrack that I loved over the years was the soundtrack to Mr. Bones for the Sega Saturn.
Ooh, that's a deep cut. All right.
Yeah.
Okay. So a game whose soundtrack you might not want to see kind of go down the same path, or what you're worried about losing in the future. Well, you know, currently what comes to mind, I just can't help but think of this game, like, jumps to my mind right away because it's something I've been playing recently. But Forza Horizon 3 has an awesome, like, licensed music that it uses, and some really cool songs. I love the Pulse Station in there, but there's some other good stuff too. The one station that I don't think would ever shut down within Forza Horizon is the one that plays classical music all the time. But let me tell you, there is something to be said about racing to classical music everywhere, which, in fact, since I'm going to be doing a live stream for Forza Laser later on tonight, I will probably do the classic music live stream in the game because it's the one thing that's not going to get my stream muted.
Oh, that's what you think of. I mean,
oh, yeah, maybe. Yeah, maybe it might. I don't know. But I don't, you know, most of those songs are public domain, which is why it's very easy for them to create a radio station around it. So, and that's why. Doesn't Grand Theft Auto have a similar thing? Like, you can go around killing people to classic music?
I think they had a classic station. I know Saints Row did.
Yeah, oh, that's it. Saints Row had something like that. Well, that's another game that the soundtrack is pretty killer on. But, of course, then there's also in my mind, I've got to go back to of course, music-infused games and a lot of what this show is built on. Things like DDR and, you know, Beatmania, and even more so recently as Rock Band. And we do see that Rock Band has had to put up with some of these issues where they have to delist songs after a certain amount of time because they can't renew the music licensing or what have you. So, you know, music is so important on those games. Anything that comes to mind for you guys? Something that, you know, you wouldn't want to see suffer a similar fate to Alan Wake based on the music licensing? Or some other type of strong, strong soundtrack?
I mean, I don't know. I can't think of anything.
Not really.
Really? Almost anything Nintendo. I think a lot of Nintendo, a lot of Nintendo music really defines a lot of Nintendo games. But see, I mean, like,
but those are all in-house for
exactly,
them.
Exactly.
And that would be kind of karma, to be honest. But yeah,
exactly. It's like when I think about those, I think like, well, that's never going to be a problem because Nintendo developed all that stuff in-house. They own it. They're never going to pull the rug on that stuff. I can't help but only focus on like these license type of situations that are a little more vulnerable for those types of things. But all right, well, Rage Nader, thank you for the question. I appreciate it. Oh, let me go to chat. There's some good answers here in chat. Dr. Tetsuya says Jet Set Radio. That's a very good one as well. Let's see. Fifth Dream does call out that Watch Dogs also uses the classical music station. Act Deft calls out Taiko no Tatsujin, speaking of music-based video games. So there you go. Some other answers as well, Spaznair.
Well, have a nice weekend, and I'll probably speak to you guys either over Steam over during the week or talk to you next week then.
Sounds good. You take care, all right?
Yep, you right. Too.
Bye.
Bye.
All right. Let's see if we get any other phone calls over on our Skype line at Orange Lounge Radio. 1-877 game OLR if you want to do it the old school way. So, but Orange Lounge Radio is the place to call on Skype. I think most people are using Skype these days. You can also, of course, download Skype on your smartphone. So it makes it really, really, really easy to give us a call. So, some late breaking news they're talking about in our chat room right now. Apparently, Powers Booth has passed away. He was from, he's recently in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Although I must admit, I had to look him up a little bit, but he was in the Sin City sequel as well. He's one of those actors that's like, I totally recognize him, but I don't think he's ever been the star of the movie. But anyway, that is unfortunate. So rest in peace there. Let's see. Sorry, Raginator, if I said the wrong name, but it is your current Skype handle there. So that's what threw me off there for a minute. SSJ 100 Matt points out he was that prototypical bad guy and asshole dad in the 90s. Yes, that's true. That's very true. All right. I'll take one more call for calls. Orange Lounge Radio, all one word on Skype. Meanwhile, while we wait for anything to come in, I'll check in with Loki for possible last minute stories.
I don't really have anything. The only thing I have, there's a Kickstarter going on right now. They have 21 hours to go called Eagle Island that looks pretty awesome. It's all pixel arty. So go check that out on Kickstarter. They have a demo you can try, too, and it looks pretty fantastic.
Cool.
And they've already hit their goal, but they can always use more money.
Of course. Who doesn't want more money? All right. Well, since our Skype line isn't lighting up, I am left to believe that Raginator was the only one that wanted to call, so I'm going to go ahead and close it up. But you can, of course, always email us at a later time, participate at orangeloungeradio.com, and you can also tweet us throughout the week as well. We do always like to read the tweets and hear your feedback at OLR on Twitter. Yes, we actually have a three-letter handle on Twitter, which is kind of shocking, but we got on Twitter really early, so I guess we were able to grab it, at OLR. Alrighty, well, that's going to do it for another episode of Orange Lounge Radio. We're going to wrap up for tonight, go around to everybody's final thoughts. But of course, as first and always, I do want to thank you guys for listening to the show. If you enjoyed Orange Lounge Radio, please help us spread the word. Tell a friend or five about the show. Heck, tell an enemy. But we are the show where every gamer has a voice, but you know, we have to have the voices here in order to be able to air them. So we appreciate that. So, nice 5-star review on a place like iTunes, Google Play, wherever it is you found this show. Those reviews go a long, long, long way, let me tell you. Really appreciate it. So, that's it for those plugs. So let's go around and get everybody's final thought for the night. I'll start. My final thought is, my sinuses have been acting really bitchy. Like, I think I've developed allergies in the past year, and it sucks. But soup sounds really good. I want some soup. Yum. All right. Darksoccer, you got the mic. Your final thought tonight.
I accidentally deleted everything in my inbox, but I'm kind of not mad about it.
Can you undelete?
I could go back in and recover what I want to, but again, I'm kind of not mad about it.
So you maybe you just have to set it free.
I've already moved over like the biggest stuff that I do and look at, and I'm not going to empty out my trash for a while, so it'll be fine.
All right, fair enough. And last but not least, Loki.
I don't know. Maybe I'll have to 3D print something this week.
Sounds like a good idea. And bring it to the show. I want to see what it looks like.
Yeah, I do need to set it up. What I wanted to print you something for the Wii, or Wii U, something for the Switch, because they've got like stands for it and stuff so that you can still charge it.
Better stands.
Yeah,
than,
like you can still charge it. Like if you've taken it to go, you can, instead of the kickstand, you can charge it that way. So they have those. They have like alternative, I don't know what you call them, like the thing that you strap the two ends to together to kind of make it one controller.
Oh, the Joy-Con holder thing.
Yeah, whatever that's called. So they have like stuff you can make with those.
Huh.
So maybe we can make a custom one of that or something.
That'd be fun.
Yep.
All right. Well, that's going to do it for another week of Orange Lounge Radio, but we will be back in 7 days to talk about whatever comes up in gaming the next week. Be nice to each other. Don't be jerks online unless the person really, really, really deserves it. All right, just kidding. Have fun gaming, everybody. We'll see you next time in 7 days. Bye.
You've been listening to Orange Lounge Radio. Orange Lounge Radio is a production of OLR Studios. To join us for a live show, tune into VogNetwork.com Sunday nights at 6 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Eastern. The views and opinions expressed in this program do not necessarily reflect those of the staff of Orange Lounge Radio or Vog Network. But you know they were all still true. See you next week.